Okay, hello and welcome to episode 61 of Strike and Mike. What's up, Striker?
Hey, how you doing, everyone?
How's it going? So we've got an exciting episode for you today. We got some prep on a few things. I think you had some items you wanted to go over with, starting with the NRA, I think, right?
Yeah. So here's something interesting. So the NRA, about a year ago, they elected Ollie North, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, famous for basically running guns and drugs for the CIA in a operation that violated the Boland Amendment in Congress. So yeah, they went behind Congress's back to fund the Sandinistas, but also to enable terrorism from Noriega and Panama and so on. Anyway, Oliver North was kind of like the fixer, right? So Elliot Abrams was giving the orders, and Ollie North would go and make them happen. A lot of it is he was their connection to the underworld. So he took the fall for that, you know, because Ollie North is actually a goof ass. Yeah. This guy was caught. These gay ops they were doing, criminal activity the U.S. government was involved in, was exposed when Ollie North got some numbers mixed up when they were doing a wire transfer of money that was meant to be laundered. So they had like $10 million that were supposed to be laundered in a Swiss bank. And Ollie North got one of the numbers wrong, so it went to a private citizen's bank account. And then came out. But North was actually a loyal soldier. And when the shit hit the fan, he kept his mouth shut. He took his slap on the wrist. And then eventually his charges got vacated. He was convicted, obviously, but yeah, they were vacated, overturned. Zog showed its gratitude. You know, in the 90s, Mr. North was able to reinvent himself as a GOP politician.
Yep. I remember
he became a TV celebrity and so on. Go ahead.
Yeah, as I say, I remember there was a rehabilitation of him that happened in the conservative movement, and he became like a commentator, I think on Fox, of course, a commentator, and he was like a darling of these like kind of slightly to the right of the Republican mainstream people, and they always admired him because he was a good patriot, a good soldier. He didn't talk, and it was like, well, the guy was a fucking spook and drug dealer, and like, like what's so heroic about that? You know, it's like okay, I get it. If you don't like, I mean, is anybody in America really so worried about, you know, Daniel Ortega and the Sandinistas that it's so heroic to sell drugs to fund the revolutionary movement against them, or counter-revolutionary movement, depending on how your perspective, I suppose. But I mean, what's heroic about this? What's so wonderful about this? Does anyone really give a shit?
They ever addressed that, or did they just meme it until it caught?
It's not a question that that ever comes up. They don't address the question. I mean, I think that interestingly, the liberals that were the ones that, you know, were going after North and talking, and of course, you know, again, when Iran-Contra was going on, this was a political football. Nobody was examining the real in-depth ramifications of the entire system that was indicted by this scandal. It became a Democrat versus Republican political issue, and because of that, they were successful in rehabilitating Ollie North because these pro-communist liberals that supported the South American communists, these Democrats and liberals, and then Ollie North was fighting the communists, and it's just stupid shit.
Well, you know, fast forward to 2017. Okay, the NRA spent a lot of money on Donald Trump. They actually they did kind of like a long shot bet, you know, high stakes, high reward type of thing.
Yeah,
and they won. Donald Trump was elected.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember what was going on with the NRA back then, but they were really excited. Like, they were drawing up all these bills. The GOP controlled the Congress. They had Donald Trump in charge. They
want 50-state reciprocity.
Yeah, there's so much stuff going on. So that was 2017. The NRA never had more energy and more excitement than in 2000, as soon as Donald Trump got elected, right? Mm-hmm. why did all those bills end up lingering?
Yeah, whatever happened to 50 state reciprocity? Trump was the, I mean, look, it's not nearly as important as immigration and some of the other things that Trump was talking about. But he did make it. It was a promise on the campaign trail. He did talk about 50 state reciprocity for carry permits. And where's that?
So Ollie
buried under the sand on the Golan Heights.
So in 2017, we had all that excitement. Then the GOP Congress didn't do anything, of course. 2018 rolls around, and Mr. Ollie North becomes president.
Becoming president by skating off of that rehabilitated conservative good soldier image that they let, and the liberals did, that they let him get that image rehabilitated. That was not something they chose to fight on when it happened. There was a few people that were like, holy shit, they're trotting Ollie North out here. What the hell is wrong with them? But then that was it.
I suppose the mindset from some of the morons in the NRA at the top level, they just assume, oh, this is Ollie North. He's got, you know, connections with the government. He knows people. He can talk to them for us and so on. So superficially, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, in practice, what about the suspicion? This is not exactly an ethical person.
No.
Okay. this is actually a criminal. This guy is a known convicted criminal. So they put this guy in charge. Suddenly, I've heard conflicting reasons on what's going on, why the NRA has been cucking like crazy, why NRA TV increasingly sells Washington consensus to its members rather than its members' will to Washington. There's been some debate about that, but, you know, that debate doesn't seem to be very constructive. It seems to be more a lot of infighting and so on, which, you know, is also very suspicious. But I digress. Long story short, ever since North has been in charge, the NRA has been supporting red flag gun laws.
Yep.
Okay. This is something that parts of the GOP Congress also are supporting. And, you know, what's interesting is that a lot of people are curious. They're like, you know, why isn't anyone in the media talking about this? This is totally out of the headlines. There's no conversation going on in the public discourse on these red flag gun laws, which essentially, you know, if your wife gets mad at you, she can file a report saying you're a danger to society or something. And without any due process whatsoever, all a judge has to do is sign a complaint, and suddenly your Second Amendment rights are gone. And of course, we see already how that's going to be used for political reasons. So if some cat lady sees you on Facebook saying something they don't agree with, they can say, oh, this guy, he's a violent neo-Nazi. He's going to be the next mass shooter or something. You got to take his guns away. And trust me, there's more than one judge out there perfectly fine violating your First Amendment and Second Amendment rights with these gun laws.
Totally.
So yeah, the NRA,
sorry, go ahead.
The NRA is taking its members down this slippery slope, Sonny Bono style. And its members are actually quite angry about it. I mean, there's a competing group, Gun Owners of America, that has been growing in response to this. But anyway, the point I wanted to make is about Ollie North. So here's something interesting. Remember Wayne LaPierre?
Yep.
He's the CEO. He has been since the early 90s.
Yeah, he's the European-style socialist guy who made actually a very, you know, for a conservative, a good speech at the GOP convention, I think in 2018. I think CPAC 2018, he gave a pretty good speech that had Jews kvetching, because he named like 12 Jews in the speech as like the main enemies of the gun lobby. And then he called them European-style socialists, which then got picked up as a meme dog whistle for Jews, which I know irritated Stryker because he considers himself a legitimate European-style socialist.
Hitler was a European-style socialist.
It's just a meme, bro.
uh, what was fascinating is all the op-eds that came after that.
It is kind of a shitty meme, though, because, yeah, they're not Jews aren't European-style anything. Fuck that.
You think Michael Bloomberg is a European or a socialist?
Michael Bloomberg is a Levantine-style capitalist.
Yeah. It's a good one. So the Levantine-style capitalists were named. And there was no actual anti-Jewish context there. It just so happens to be that the people trying to disarm white ordinary whites are Jewish. And that's because they see... It just so happens to be.
It's just a weird... One of these weird coincidences. You know, cosmic.
Yeah. I mean, that's up there with... You know, the Jewish consensus on that is almost comparable to...
Yeah. I mean, it's even... It's another one of those things where, like, oh, you think that there's this... commentator, this base Jewish commentator, because he goes off on like the student radicals and the communists or something like that. Yeah. But just look at his actual positions. He's just a liberal.
Yeah. Well, you can call it liberalism, he's actually just a Zionist.
Yeah.
And so long story short, Wayne LaPierre has been in their crosshairs ever since that. You know, another kind of anecdotal thing I'll say is, you know, that speech you're referencing, that was done at CPAC, where in 2017, the NRA had a massive showing at CPAC.
Yep.
You know, then you go to the last CPAC, the NRA was barely even present. They had almost no presence there.
I mean, I don't want to, like, necessarily ignite old disputes or whatever, but the 2018 CPAC and 2018 State of the Union were like night and day compared to 2019.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of this was because of the what happened in the media and with the alt-right and things like that, where they basically saw what was happening, and they saw, now it was obviously in not these things were not perfect by any stretch. They were still very much corrupted by conservatism and conservative priors and libertarian thinking and things like that, but there was something happening. There was excitement there. Something new and fresh was coming up. And over the last year, they just squashed that stuff. They made the conservative – they totally recucked the conservative movement. They got them to get afraid and to purge anybody. Not even us, but like the alt-light. It was really – it was more like what was happening was the alt-light was successfully getting recognized in their circles, and we were influencing the alt-light.
Right.
That whole thing, the kibosh was put on it, where now people like, you know, people like Faith Goldie were just stopped at the door and told to turn around and go away.
Yeah. Now you have, quote, conservatives like Andrew Sullivan that refer Milo, fucking Milo. He refers to Milo as a fascist.
Andrew Sullivan, wait, he's fucking gay, fucking...
Yeah.
He was like the original fucking gay. He is gay. He's openly gay. Yep. I don't know if you knew that.
He's got that fucking the kind of butch fag.
He's the original like gay right-leaning centrist. He's such a fucking fag.
He's just a tool zog. But yeah. Regardless, back to the main point, the NRA showing at the previous CPAC, not last year's but the one before it, was massive. Compared to, and also very energetic compared to the very small showing in the Ali North era of the NRA.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I'm building some circumstantial evidence here. It's actually a much stronger case I'm making than the FBI's case against Rise Above Movement, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, any case is stronger than that.
Yeah. No, the FBI claims that if you buy athletic tape, and you tape your hands up at a permitted political rally, that's a conspiracy to
riot.
We're
going to talk a little bit more about that.
Talk about
that'll
that
be
way.
Our next story. But
So anyway, back to Wayne LaPierre. So this guy has been, you know, one of the top guys in the NRA for decades now. And long story short, Ali North comes in. He starts doing all these or overseeing all these reforms. And the NRA is weak now. The Republican Party is desperate to not have them around anymore, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, a couple of days ago, Wayne LaPierre goes out there and publicly makes a public statement saying Oliver North is trying to blackmail me.
Mm-hmm.
So what went on here is Oliver North found some, quote, improprieties in finances or something, and he approached Wayne LaPierre, and he said, listen, I'm going to pay you a very big sum of money to retire. You're going to get a really nice package, but you got to get out. You got to retire.
Hmm.
And if you don't retire, I'm going to make this public and I'm going to resign. And he probably assumed Wayne or Mr. LaPierre would take the money and run. You know, that's what most conservatives would do.
I mean, he's probably had a good reason to assume that. But yeah. Wayne LaPierre seems to be, you know, let's give credit where it's due. He seems to be made of a little bit sterner stuff than that.
Well, the NRA is probably the only white Gentile lobby.
Yeah, and it was, and also America. Amazingly, the only actually effective lobby until recently. I mean, they were very effective.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it has no Jews in its executive committee. I'm not sure.
I would have to look to check on that. I wouldn't be surprised because it's one of those things where it's the whole thing is like anathema to Jews. And then, you know, the speech that if there were any after LaPierre's speech at CPAC, they probably all would have resigned in protest, you know,
yeah.
And done something like that. But no, I don't know. I mean, I don't know off the top of my head. But yeah, it's a pretty Gentile organization. And sure, they make blunders, but they were the only thing that was effective, and all the vitriol about them in the media. I mean, let's compare for a second the way the media talks about something like the NRA versus how they talk about AIPAC, right? Yeah. Now, which lobby is bigger? Which lobby is more deleterious for America? It's clearly AIPAC.
Well, the NRA is probably bigger than AIPAC, but AIPAC has a lot more money.
Well, I mean, bigger in terms of what, though?
Size.
Size.
Membership.
What do you mean by membership. Yeah, oh, yeah, of course. Obviously, yes, membership. I meant, like, in terms of bigger in terms of money and influence.
Absolutely.
Clearly, they have
the NRA,
more
to members. To be fair, though, the NRA is influential to a point because they operate a lot like a Jewish lobby. I mean, that's where a lot of the resentment comes from. I mean, the NRA has lobbyists that will pay congresspeople to vote in ways they like, something Jews don't like, because Jews only want their own guys to be able to do that.
Right.
The NRA is also very inflexible in the sense that they understand that whenever some concern troll is brought about bump stocks or red flag laws, that these are just people trying to get you on that slippery slope.
And also things like a mental health registry for gun owners. Mm-hmm. Like if you know, a registry of people with mental problems and then those people can't own guns, they've fought against things like that. Those kinds of proposals have been floated and they put the cop. No, you're right. I mean, look, the Jews were mad at the NRA because the NRA saw what successful Jewish lobbies do and they copied their model. And they always would say, like, the GOP is owned by the NRA. Well, the GOP is far more owned by AIPAC than the NRA.
It's just
in their niche. In their niche, the NRA was successful, and it was successful by copying Jewish methods. It was also successful because it had huge grassroots support, and they could mobilize these massive write-in and call-in campaigns to threaten, you know, the seat. I mean, Congress people whose seats are far more precarious than senators and things like that would get scared of these people if they're in a conservative, you know, deep red district and they're threatening my guns. It's like these people will get politically active because of the NRA.
So just quickly back to Ollie North and Wayne LaPierre.
Well, I wanted to finish this point about NRA versus AIPAC and how the media talks about them versus. Now, you have things like the vitriol is poured on the NRA by all of the liberal side of the media. It is made fun of constantly by comedians. They, you know, like all of this stuff. Like you see SNL will do anti-NRA stuff. All these woke people do anti-NRA stuff. Then it goes all the way up to CNN, MSNBC, New York Times, all these Jew media outlets. The only media outlet that doesn't go after them or that would even have one of their people on would be Fox.
Right.
And so But compare that to how they talk about AIPAC. Now, these are people, and these are people, like, whenever lobbying is a big problem in Washington, lobbying is a big problem in Washington, is brought up by leftist political commentators or, you know, seemingly liberal political commentators. The NRA is example number one of who they say big money is ruling Washington. They ignore that they have a real grassroots constituency,
yeah,
and they totally fucking ignore AIPAC and all the Jewish lobbies.
Well, yeah.
And so I just want that people to understand that. And look, I know
another reason the NRA is effective is that its entire membership owns guns, and they have like 30 million members. So that's another reason.
Washington types,
the swamp has some respect for them.
There's a thing there that they have been successful at, but apparently they've decided that rather than defeat them legislatively, because if you keep fighting them head on, you're going to make them stronger. So what are they going to do? They have to subvert them from within.
That's what happened when they started to lose their sponsorships. A lot of people started to join just out of principle.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, here's where Ali starts to glow. Okay. So Ali resigned after Wayne LaPierre publicly called them out and said, "This man, this president, Ali North, is trying to blackmail and extort me into quitting and purging me." And after that happened, Ali North resigned in protest, quote. And literally hours after he announces resignation, there were leaks to the media. And Letitia James from the New York Attorney General's office opened an investigation into their tax exemption. Interesting, isn't that?
Yeah.
Literally hours after Ali North resigned. That's when all this heat started to come upon them. So he said this. He said, "Listen, if you don't do what I say and you don't leave and let me control this thing without any without you getting in the way, I'm going to go and destroy this organization." That's basically what destroy Wayne LaPierre, but also the organization. So anyway, long story short, not for nothing, American law, like, this is something, this is the red pill on liberal democracy. Liberal mm-hmm. democracy has so many laws that it's impossible to obey them, and it's designed that way.
Yeah.
They're not going to punish you for every law you might break, every periphery law, every little accounting law and whatever. That's not the problem. What it is that they keep all these laws as confusing and as confusing as possible, so that you break them, so that one day when they need to shut you down or destroy you for political reasons, they have a fig leaf.
Yeah, and
that's what's going on here. And so, long story short, anyway.
But I want to talk about that for 1 second. I want to expand on that for a second. So North is saying that here I'm looking at a Reuters article on this. According to the newspaper, North sent board members a response to LaPierre's letter later on Thursday, in which he defended himself, said his actions were for the good of the NRA, and that he was forming a crisis committee to examine financial matters inside the organization. Now, if you're an NRA member, if you believe in this gun control anti-gun control agenda, gun rights, Second Amendment, right? Do you give a shit more about whether the NRA is successful in its mission or whether there's maybe a few financial improprieties at the top here and there? I mean, do you really give a shit about these? And so you get these people.
There's a sexual harassment claim that North is leveling against LaPierre, which is always fucking bullshit.
That's always bullshit. But let's say that there is some finance. Maybe fucking LaPierre even wet his beak a little bit. Do you care about that more than you give a shit about the actual mission of the NRA? Are you willing to undermine the entire mission of the NRA and the organization itself because of some stupid financial regulations? Or do you not give a shit if maybe LaPierre took a little extra cash on the side and you want the fucking organization to keep pushing its agenda? Obviously, the answer to that is obvious. And the fact that Ali North comes out in this, pious Ali North, sudden cares about the fucking law? We're supposed to believe Ali North's pieties about the law and financial impropriety. Get the fuck out of here.
He's a regular Avenger.
Get the fuck out of here. Yeah, this guy's fucking Captain America here.
He's a regular
Steve
Marvel
Rogers,
Avenger.
Captain America. He's got the shield. He's fighting for truth. Get the fuck out of here. This guy's fucking giving money to South American drug dealers and running guns. Get the hell out of here, Ollie.
As a patriotic lifetime public servant, I am outraged.
Yeah, I cannot believe
Wayne LaPierre gives contracts to his friends.
Yeah, I know. Oh. I know, right? It's like, and the thing is, like, this is why in some ways, like, dictatorships are just more fucking honest. Because if some official in a bureaucracy just, they take some cash on the side, everybody knows that shit goes on. And it doesn't really matter that much.
You know what really outrages me, though, is, you know, when the shit came out about the Southern Poverty Law Center, the best we got from the Republican Party was Senator Cotton writing them an angry letter.
Yeah. No, they were just dead silent.
And yet here we have this fucking, you know, Dinduisha opening up a frivolous investigation. I mean, I didn't even know you could do this from just the state's office. Especially, I don't believe the NRA is headquartered in New York. You know, this is just like, you know, basically.
They've been going after the NRA hard in New York, particularly for a few years. Andrew Cuomo put, there's laws in New York that, I'd have to go back and look into it. Andrew Cuomo did a flex on them recently that was ridiculous and probably unconstitutional. But again, no one did anything because, you know, but the thing is this, this is the other thing. I think, you know, that's why these fucking prosecutors exist. These state prosecutors aren't there to protect the public from criminals. They're there to carry on political vendettas.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. I mean, that is what the U.S. attorneys do this. They are there. Whether they're U.S. attorneys or state attorneys, particularly the higher up they go. Like, if you're, like, some low-level prosecutor at, like, a municipal level, sure, you're going to be putting a lot of black, you know, criminals in jail or whatever. But if the higher up you go on this chain, the more political your job is. And you engage in political vendettas. That's what Letitia Jones does. That's what Thomas Cullen does. That's what's her name? Kim Fox does. That's what they do. Or doesn't do. You know, that's why Kim Fox is like, wait, I'm supposed to engage in political persecution of the state's enemies, not Jussie Smollett.
it does say that the NRA is chartered in New York, which is, I don't know why they would do that.
Yeah,
that's fucking,
they might be chartered in all 50 states, though. But if they're chartered in New York, that's really dumb. Like, that gives the New York, the most Jewish state in the union, absolute ability
that's
to
like,
attack
that's
them
like,
much more.
That's like, you know, that's like having the headquarters to your anti-circumcision lobby in Tel Aviv. Like, what the fuck? Why would you?
Yeah, no, that doesn't.
Why would you do that?
They might have thought it was some kind of flex. I'd have to look up if they have to be
very
chartered
dumb
in every state or how this works. I don't know how all of that works, but I mean, if
so, anyway, the NRA's already under attack. They've been increasingly deplatformed. As large as they are, they're getting deplatformed. The sponsors, the capitalists are trying to crush. They're trying to choke them out. So they're in a little bit of trouble in that sense. And now, if they lose their tax exemption, which they very well might, they're getting all these subpoenas served to them. And this is, again, this is entirely thanks to Ollie North. Okay. Yep. Ollie North is responsible for this. So they're getting hit with subpoenas and so on. Now, here's the interesting thing. You were saying before that, hey, you know, we don't care if Wayne LaPierre wets his beak or whatever. Well, they had their convention in Indianapolis, and they reelected Wayne LaPierre, the CEO position. But what I don't like is that they kept Ollie North in the capacity of the executive board. So Ollie North is still going to be a member, a high up member of the NRA. Mm-hmm. Now you tell me, I mean, this might be getting a little paranormal over here. You know, I was talking to Johnny about this actually a week and a half ago, and he was shocked. He didn't even know about any of this. You know, one thing I find fascinating, Mike, is that the conspiracy theory crowd, like Alex Jones and so on, they're not really talking about how this lifetime glow in the dark, known for his corruption and black ops, is running the number one gun lobby. I mean,
I didn't even know about it until this, like, scandal hit. To be honest, I didn't know that Ollie North was in there. I just hadn't heard about it. And look, I mean,
it's like putting the fox in charge of the National Hen Society.
Yeah. Well, in their defense, though, like, there's so much shit to follow. You know, sometimes, and if the media doesn't,
I don't know, man. This is a pretty no. I disagree. Mm-hmm. I disagree. No.
Well, I didn't know about it.
If you are a gun nut libertarian,
okay, if you're a
conspiratard, and you see Oliver North in charge of the number one gun lobby in America.
That's got to, yeah. I mean, if that's your thing, then yeah. Then see, I didn't know about it because I just NRA is not a thing I've been paying attention to on a day-to-day basis. But yeah, that would definitely raise some alarm bells. So I just looked. They are chartered in New York, and the reason is because they were chartered in 1871. Back when they didn't realize what they were doing, and I think that they probably keep it there because I think I don't know how this works, but maybe moving it to another state would require them to not be the NRA and be something else. I don't fucking know. It doesn't matter.
Right.
But if they're keeping themselves chartered in New York because of nostalgia, because that's where they chartered themselves in 1871, that's a bad move, and they should move to like Alabama or something. I don't know. Or maybe not there. I don't know. I don't know where to move. I don't know where you can go anymore.
Where are you gonna move now?
Yeah. There's nowhere to go. Maybe that's their thinking. Like, where are we even going to go?
They're seriously debating. I mean, the red flag gun laws are being targeted at red states. I mean, Oklahoma is debating it. And again, the NRA has historically opposed these as what they are, gun grabs. Mm-hmm. It's only recently under Ollie North, some people were saying that Wayne LaPierre was approving of it or something, but I don't know the exact internal politics of it.
I doubt it.
Again, though, here's another weird thing, though. A lot of the attacks on the NRA that you see on these weird periphery gun blogs target Wayne LaPierre, which is very odd. And again, that strikes me as some COINTELPRO shit. What do you want me to say? That's my genuine feeling about this. Again, I only have circumstantial proof, just like I only have circumstantial proof that Brennan and Comey are still on the agency's payroll when they go on TV and talk about Russia collusion and this right. and that.
Right.
So again, these are career intelligence operatives openly running our media, openly engaging in the lobbies that are supposed to be or supposed to have some degree of tension with the government. These guys are in charge of it. So, anyway, long story short, I think Ollie North was probably sent by the CIA or the FBI to destroy the NRA. That's my honest opinion on this. What do you think?
Or if not to destroy, I mean, destroy like effectively, not like actually make the organization go away, but just to subvert it, converge it.
Right.
Make it go along to get like make it stop being an impediment. That is a much softer and easier thing to accomplish than just totally destroying the organization. That's just dumb. Like, why do that? It's got all these members, it's got money, it's got influence. What you got to do is get a guy in at the top and just change the mission a little bit. And there you go. Now it's.
Yeah, and this is happening in tandem with other stuff like Maria Butina, simply who is a Russian citizen who was a member of the NRA. And she's going to be sentenced 18 months in prison.
She got completely set up.
But again, it's the NRA, and this is happening in tandem with this other shit.
Yeah. No, none of this is coincidental. And basically, I think that – and of course, it's also happening under Donald Trump, who is also the president under which the most amount of totally unconstitutional crackdowns on white nationalist groups has happened. Yeah. Because this is because these things stopped being a curiosity or a minor annoyance and started becoming a major fucking problem for these people. And they realized with the election of Trump that holy crap, there could be a huge constituency for this movement. And, we're going to have to now, what better president under which to do this than Donald Trump, who's like a bloviating moron who we can keep in like a little information bubble and just do whatever the hell we want.
He's not a moron. He's just – they just got him by the balls.
Yeah, well, they got him by the balls, but do you think that – I mean, I'm not saying – okay. I think he might be –
No, he's not going to defend it.
He's not
going to
do anything, but on some of this, they don't – I doubt he's even consulted. They just go ahead and move on their own. You know, they just go ahead – I mean, look, these agencies were actually for a while trying to take out his presidency. Like, they're definitely moving on their own.
I mean, look at how quickly Donald Trump fired Steve Bannon after the Charlottesville comments versus how long Rod Rosenstein has been in fucking
who was openly
the DOJ.
And clearly trying to subvert his presidency, who announced that he had considered wiretapping the president, which is like, that's the level of illegal above, Like, you,
that's textbook sedition.
Yeah, that is, like, basically, in theory, you could possibly even make a case that he could get shot for that. Or lethal injection, it, or whatever. You know, I mean, it's basically, no, yeah, could that, be fucking
that, that
treason.
That is sedition, and it's punished by death.
Yeah, like, it's like you to what, to make secret recordings of the president? Yeah, no, you're not really, that's really a very big deal. And he said he was going to do it, and he's, yeah, and he didn't get fired for it. And now, like, Rod Rosenstein has announced a resignation.
Oh, now I'm ready.
And as if like, it and anybody that's, like, happy about this, like, what the fuck does it matter? Who fucking cares? His work is done.
Replace him with another Jew.
Yeah, they'll just, first of all, they've got this Weissman guy in there.
He accomplished the mission he was there to.
His work is done. He's going to go and he's going to get, like, some kind of sinecure at some thing where he doesn't have to do much work, and he'll just go into a nice retirement in a McMansion someplace. And they've got this guy Weissman in there now. You know, at the DOJ, he's the one that. He was the second to Mueller. Sorry, my bad. But no, believe me, there's another guy that will fill Rod Rosenstein's shoes very easily.
And it doesn't even matter, because Trump's presidency.
It doesn't matter. The whole presidency is converged. It's subverted. It's undermined. It's not ever coming back.
Well, we're worse off than we were before.
Yeah. Well, politically, in terms
obviously,
we're worse off. In that one way. But
the country's worse
off. But the other thing is this, though, that when we thought we were well off in that way, this thing that we're doing was in a way worse off.
Yeah.
Because, but also, I don't really hold any previous positions or views or things like that on that stuff against anybody, because this is all a learning process. People came into this pretty, some people immature, some people more seasoned. And some people that were seasoned all of a sudden had their hopes up, and then they were like, oh crap, what was I thinking? And some people that were young and immature have now learned the lesson. Right. And I think this is all good. It's all a learning process. And so I think we're now, and the thing I've noticed, and this is just I'm going to fan our own balls for a minute here, that there was this talk about a year ago when the Charlottesville stuff was really bad in the media and doxings and things like that, that this whole thing was, like, falling apart and going away. And I was pretty depressed for many days back then, too. But I don't feel like that anymore. And I feel like this thing is broader and deeper by a lot than it was back then. Like, I don't know. I really do feel like
people
all that shit
finally understand what it means to be a political dissident. I mean, you know, for all the talk of accelerationism out there and all that, the real, like I said, the real accelerationism is the Judeo left. I mean, we can talk about this in a bit with a Scruton and so on. This isn't something I'm saying. This isn't something Wignats and Nazis or whatever are saying. The people saying this are people like Rod Dreher at the American Conservative saying – I mean, Rod Dreher wrote an article saying, listen, I'm a conservative. I'm a huge pussy, so I'm not going to do anything about this. But the abuses of these new – radical liberal millennials and people that feel that they have the right to censor docs, you know, the tech kikes will censor you and so on. They have no idea what they're getting into, because they will eventually lose the faith of the people in their ability to govern, or not ability, but in their right to govern. And what the outcome and consequences of that will be in the long term remain to be seen. Okay. That's what Rod Dreher is saying. He's saying, you know, conservatives aren't going to do anything about it. They're just going to take their licks and cry about it. But what's going to arise when these people continue to increase their abuses? Because, you know, the more successful they are, the less people oppose them, the angrier they get.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, what's going to happen when the NRA is fully subverted, the government starts to just start confiscating guns, and then you have the First Amendment becomes totally eroded, and then people go to court. They can't ever depend on a fair hearing or a fair outcome because the judges are activists and the lawyers and media are in on it. The prosecutors are activists. The FBI is increasingly an anti-white activist organization. Like, what is going to be the outcome of this? When people finally lose all their faith in the institution.
And Charlie Kirk is not going to contain the anger over this, okay? Like, that's not – you know, Charlie Kirk and Jordan Peterson are like milquetoast nerds are not going to contain this anger. They are. It's funny because, you know, they promoted Kirk. I remember when Kirk was like not really very much, and I actually know somebody who knew Kirk from a libertarian club in college, and he was a nerd then, and he's a nerd now. And his thing is this thing that they're promoting as a thing for young people. But if you go look at Charlie Kirk's Twitter, it's all fucking boomers. It's the people that are responding are the same people responding to this dumb message all along. He doesn't appeal to young people. So,
you know, there was a poll recently that tested how the Republican Party's anti-socialism message plays with the public, and it's a disaster.
Yeah, no, so it's just not sticking. No, you can't. Look, these people aren't going to listen anyway, so it doesn't matter. Like, they just fucked up. The problem is they can't give an appealing message to the white youth in America. They can't. There's no message that they can have that's appealing. Like, just more because it always reverts back to this fucking AstroTurf bullshit. Libertarian gay nonsense, and it's just totally uninspiring. And
there was a piece in you know, riffing off of that, there was a piece in Vanity Fair about Fox News. Remember, we've been talking for a while about how they want to get rid of Tucker Carlson, and so on.
Oh, there's no question they do. Yeah.
Basically, what's going on is the fags and the neoliberals at Fox News, like Shepard Smith, are
who has the lowest ratings on. Who's got like? There was a poll of Fox viewers' favorite anchors, and he got like 2%.
Right, right. That guy, people like that, who are fundamentally anti white, and they want to do CNN style propaganda. Basically, what's going on is that these sources on the inside that Vanity Fair talked to are saying that Hannity is planning to leave in 2021. He's going to leave Fox. He says that Fox is increasingly a hostile fucking place to work, even though he's, the moneymaker. He can't believe it. I mean, Hannity is an idiot. But if Fox News is too unfriendly for Hannity, what's the situation with Laura Ingraham or Tucker Carlson? So essentially what's going on here is that there's a lot of talk that Fox is planning. After if Trump loses in 2020, Fox will probably be planning to become more of a oligarch system, pro system.
There's
type.
No question about it. Why on earth would Fox News ever hire Donna Brazile?
Or put Paul Ryan on their executive staff.
Yeah, I mean, and those two things happened. I mean, we talked about this a little while ago when they fired Jeanine Pirro. Who, whatever you say about her, she had some really stupid opinions, but she was more, She like riled up the base. She was a little bit like an Ann Coulter type figure, right? Except not quite as good as Ann Coulter. Right. But, she was like a rabble rouser. They fired her, and they hired Donna Brazile. Like, who that watches Fox has any interest in Donna Brazile and what she's going to say?
Well, nobody. they can nobody. Make the argument that, you want to have that on for balance.
Of course they make that.
But CNN has token Trump people on their show. I mean, MSNBC had Pat Buchanan on their channel at one point.
Well, Morning Joe was supposed to be like the token, but then the guy's just a complete fag. So it's just like he's just a nerd and a fag. So it's just like, whatever. Yeah.
So essentially what's going on here is that they are all conspiring to kill any semblance of white populism. Mm-hmm. All of them. And to the extent that they're not acting now, it's because they don't feel they're strong enough to act yet. But over time, I think, Tucker Carlson probably understands this too. He's going to get fired, and as soon as his ratings dip.
Or he just won't get a new contract or whatever. I saw something that was like, they're going to let his contract run out, and then that'll be that.
And that's their number one primetime host.
Yeah. And the excuse will be, the advertisers are running from him. Well, why are advertisers running from this guy? He's the most popular cable news host in his time slot. By a long shot, he more than doubles the opposition.
Not just that, but Fox Fox News doesn't make most of its money from sponsors. These it makes it from cable packages. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, who runs cable company? The Comcast company?
Yeah, no, I know. I mean,
run by a bunch of shikes.
Plus, on top of that, a lot of media companies don't make money.
None of them do.
Yeah. I mean, the New York Times corporation makes money, but the paper doesn't. The corporation's money all comes from financial investments.
Yep.
And that's why they can keep running, you know, their Zionist rag.
Mm-hmm. I've
got to be honest with you. I think the New York Times is troublingly anti-Semitic and has been for a long time.
You know, that's literally the message the GOP is going into 2020 with. That the New York Times is anti-Semitic.
I know. If you sell that to somebody, they would have to be, I can't even imagine how stupid you'd have to be to believe that. But one thing you definitely have to be is never look at who owns the paper and who the editorial board is.
And who half the journalists are.
This Jewish-owned paper where 6 out of 7 editorial board members are Jews. Yes, clearly. They've got an anti... It was funny. And then Brett Stevens, Jew, and we covered this column on TDS yesterday, column about the cartoon. He says, New York Times has a long-standing problem with anti-Semitism. And now... he knows he's lying because he knows who runs the paper and owns it. He knows the Sulzberger family. Do they still own it? I think so.
Yes.
So he knows the Sulzberger family. He knows who all the other editorial board members are. He knows Paul Krugman. He knows Thomas Friedman. He knows David Brooks. He knows Barry Weiss. These are rattling off the top of my head. So we got 5 Jews on the top editorial board people. Yeah. Ross Douhat is the only Gentile I can think of. Douhat.
Yeah. Yep. And I think, yeah.
So Maureen Dowd, I guess, too. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah. That whole thing about Ilhan Omar and New York Times.
He's basically like, no more even mild criticism of Israel within the pages of this paper, please. Thank you.
Well, I mean, the actual story behind that cartoon is that it was made by a kind of affiliate of the New York Times.
Yeah, yeah.
It was made by a Portuguese paper, I think. It
didn't appear in the U.S.
And it was kind of like an editorial oversight that it got published. Like, it's not like they put that out there on purpose. But, you know, the idea that the New York Times is anti-Israel even is laughable.
I know.
I don't know if you remember when the 2014 bombing of Gaza by Israel. I mean, that was something that everyone condemned because it was horrific. And the New York Times ran an op-ed, or rather, I'm sorry, an editorial board op-ed, where they insisted that, oh yeah, the reason Israel is killing all those children in Gaza is because they have too many children. It's their fault. Like, that's...
Yeah, they mentioned the demographic. I mean, Israel, they literally talk about constantly the demographic problem.
Yeah.
Which, what do you think that means? You know, so if anybody gets upset or freaked out when someone talks about the Jewish problem, well, how do Jews talk about... How do they talk about... You know, their own country.
Right.
Like, come on, just get out of here with that. And, you know, it's, yeah. I mean, look, Brett Stevens was pulling off a flex on behalf of, like, you know, on behalf of, like, more militant or more nationalist sections of Zog.
He's also a fanatical gun grabber.
Yeah, no, I mean,
for Goy.
Yeah, yeah. He's basically saying, And it's really a flex on the whole media of, like, just this is...
Just for the record, Israeli teachers in primary school carry assault rifles into class, okay? Just for the record.
Oh, dude, people walk
around...
And
you're far more likely to die in a mass shooting or a crime in the United States than you are in Israel, just so you know.
Yeah.
Far more likely. So... Yeah. Tell me, does that sound cynical to you? Does that sound like an agenda? Yes, of course it does. When someone applies rules differently depending on the race, that is a typical agenda. That's a political agenda. That's a racial agenda. And that's exactly what is behind the Jewish gun-grabbing epidemic. Because the problem with the NRA's discourse here, and again, they are what they are. I'm not going to go too hard against them. The problem they have is the assumption that the gun grabbing thing is something only liberal Jews are doing. That's simply not true. Most of the right-wing Jews also support taking guns away from law-abiding white people.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest. All of these Jews live. I mean, they all live in Manhattan, right, or Hollywood, and they all go to dinner with each other, and discuss these,
including
things.
Ben Shapiro.
Yeah, yeah.
Ben Shapiro, I believe, lives in Beverly Hills.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I mean, this is all. It's all so fucking transparent. But I guess, I mean, we're out here doing this because it might not be obvious to some people. But when I saw that Brett Stevens column, I truly chortled. I was just like, is this guy kidding me? And the only way you could pull that off is if the people that you're talking to. I mean, if somebody said, I mean, look, anybody that's informed should. I mean, frankly, anybody. The only way you'd ever believe this is if you never read the New York Times and you don't know who runs it, and you just believe what you're told, which, you know, is probably true for a lot of people, but that's why we're here. Because, believe you me, read the New York Times. It's a Zionist paper. I mean, look, the New York Times is one of the top purveyors of Iraq war propaganda via Judith Miller and you know, her Mossad intelligence filtered through Ahmed Chalabi and then to her, which was all just fucking fake. Meant to create a bullshit excuse, you know, to actually do this war. Dude, there were like Jews out in front of the New York Times yesterday protesting because of this cartoon. This is just a phony dialectic that in the end, the resolution to it will be like, well, we're going to have to tone down criticism of Israel in the New York Times. I mean, come on.
Well, they're eager to embrace that. I mean, you don't see them toning down their deference to the SPLC after it came out that it's run by a bunch of Jewish people that rape black women or whatever. You know, you don't see them doing that. But with this stuff, they're eager to be.
Well, you don't see them toning down anti-whiteness after Covington.
Oh, fuck no.
Right.
That's a great example of where they're taking us to. In fact, when that happened and there was blowback from it, they just went back to the drawing board to figure out how they can do this again without getting any response. And their solution to that is, okay, we're going to pressure social media companies to essentially censor 60 or 70.
The New York Times immediately was more than happy to publish this column by Stevens where he attacked the paper's own rationale, which was actually the truth, which was like, oops, some international editor wasn't quite on board. And I'm sure that guy's been, God knows where that guy is now, he's in Gitmo or something. But they're like, oh, this only went through the eyes of one editor in the internet. It's like, whatever, like, it was a mistake, right? And if you believe anything else, then you're dumb. But they allowed Brett Stevens to come out with this condemnation of their own paper for this. How many condemnations of themselves did they publish about Covington? Their article on Covington was like this dry explanation of what happened, with the inclusion of all of these bias words like conspiracy theorists, right-wing activists, you know, Twitter trolls, etc., creating this blowback for this otherwise reasonable coverage of this event, which made journalists cower. That was the narrative that they were running with, was journalists unfortunately folded to right-wing activists on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, that was their narrative on Covington. So look at the difference between those two things.
Right. I mean, I think that the again, you're right. The New York Times fucking anti-Semitism scandal, that's something that no one cares about.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, well, the funny thing, Jesse said this the other day. So Jesse was reading the New York Times editorial page, and he read every editorial one day several weeks ago. I can't remember. There was some issue with Israel in the news, whatever, something. And he read every editorial in the paper, and he was like, I would have thought I was Jewish. He's like, this is all shit that matters to like a tiny group of people in New York and Hollywood, and maybe some in Chicago or a few places, and Tel Aviv, and that's it. No one else. This doesn't matter to anybody else.
Well, that's what I was talking about before. You know, I don't know if you read this statistic, but there's a 30% increase in children 10 to 17 committing suicide.
Yeah.
Why isn't there a congressional hearing about this? What is the cause of this? Of course, there's that show. That show made by Jews, based on a book written by a Jew, It's 13 Reasons Why. It's on Netflix. It's literally I made this comparison on social media. I said, like, you know, say what you want about North Korea, but their propaganda extols patriotism and racial socialism. In America, we have propaganda that we show kids, show little white kids, little white girls are watching propaganda telling them to kill themselves.
Yeah, that's fucking sick shit.
What the fuck? Why is there a congressional hearing about
this? It's not art, and it's not an exploration of, like, a taboo topic, which is how they'll fucking present it. And, like, oh, well, you just don't want, like, freedom of expression and to look at these taboo... Fuck you! Like, that is propaganda telling people to kill themselves. Now, that's probably not the only factor in this increase. I'm sure there's plenty of them. Like, the fact that the social environment in schools is basically a hellscape. I mean, everybody of that age, and even people that are a little bit older, people in their 20s, that recount their recent experiences in these schools, it's fucking a hellscape. I mean, it was shitty when I was a kid, but it's like 10 times worse now. Yeah, and,
not just that, but also what's the effect of social media on their brains, the diversity in the school, the broken homes thanks to feminism and no-fault divorce, so many things, all of them have a Jewish root.
Look, all of these kids, there's a total lack of coherence in their life. There's nothing resembling a life trajectory that they can look forward to. There's nothing like a path that they can be set on. There's no, they have no confidence in the economy. They have no confidence in a decent family life. A lot of them have no confidence in being able to find a boyfriend or girlfriend. They are in these just completely, you know, hopeless, atomized existences, living day to day with no idea what the future is going to be like. No wonder there's suicide. And it's not purely like, a thing of, I mean, then there's also the inputs of all this tranny and homosexual stuff. And it's not necessarily any one of those things, but combine all that shit together. If you're like 12 years old in this country, what the fuck kind of future do you have?
What kind of present do you have?
Yeah. Well, your present is an incoherent mess of just weird stimuli with no coherence and no steadying hand, no father figure and mother figure, no institutions to guide you. Everyone kind of puts you at sea on your own, and you just have this bleak sort of atomized outlook. And you know, the few people that find something, it's in peers their own age, and then usually they get involved in drugs and things like that too as escapism. I mean, look, it's just
they don't even do that anymore. The kids nowadays don't even have casual sex and drugs anymore. They are even
worse. That was like a 80s and 90s thing.
Yeah. Now the kids are, you know, one thing I also theorize a lot about is, you know, this might sound stupid, but weed has gotten super strong.
Yeah.
So what kind of impact? I mean, it's been proven that marijuana consumption, if used regularly, lowers your testosterone, increases your likelihood of schizophrenia. All these things are linked to higher suicide rate.
Yeah.
So what is this genetically modified, you know, engineered?
Yeah, these, like, hydroponic, weed, like engineered, like it's like the whole plant is like purple with all those little fibers on it that have the stuff, the THC in them, and you know, you just take one puff or one hit, and you're
back in my day, the kids were lucky if they could even get, you know, with whatever little pocket money you had, if you could even get regs. Stems and seeds. And stuff
well,
like that.
See,
that
when I was a kid, like we you know, you could get. They were starting that kind of engineered shit was starting, but it's gone like out of control. Like you could get like the dank. You know, you get like the dankest bud, man. Like you could get some of that, but even then, it wasn't like even what it is today, probably. And now they've got like, now the government gives it out, and they've got these stores where you can get like concentrated oils. And I don't know, dude. There's all kinds of marijuana products and weed products that have come out that are like made to just like it's so. And yeah, and so if like smoking a joint every day in like the 70s. Would have these negative effects. Imagine what like taking these really concentrated doses of THC would have on you today. I mean,
yeah, especially in the liquid form.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, they have these oils and liquids and shit now.
You see a lot of regulation being rolled out across the country, especially in blue states, against Juul and Juul pods and stuff like that. But they don't seem as eager to regulate the synthetic or liquid THC stuff, which is super concentrated. It's super easy to hide it from your parents. You know, it doesn't have the same smell, mm-hmm. and so on. So, like, what's the role of this place? You know, if we had a country and a functional government, we could actually look into this stuff. We would have congressional hearings saying, why are 11-year-old children committing suicide at record rates? But we don't. So instead, what we have is a bunch of yids going out there saying, we need more laws to take guns away from white nationalists. Oh, the white nationalist terror threat. Oh, God, I stay up all night thinking about this. So this makes it the most important issue of the day.
Yeah, and maybe if this goes on long enough and it's just noticed too much, they'll have some token things like they do with the opiate crisis.
Yeah.
Right? And then what happens is that they'll have some of these people like Letitia Jones, who was suing Purdue Pharma. But she's going to get, like, they're seeking, like, a, there's probably going to be, it's, oh, it was like they built a $75 million rehab clinic or something. And this is going to be the resolution of this.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, well, that's it. We're done. Okay. Right. We think that, you know, and that's how these things go. We talked about this before about what they're doing with some of these state lawsuits against. And the state of Kentucky, several years ago, did one of these state lawsuits against some of these opiate manufacturers, and they got like a $26 million settlement. They just went into the state's coffers, and sure, okay, fair enough, but that's it. How many people died? How many people's lives were shattered? You know, and they didn't put a stop to anything. It's like, it was basically, here, state, here's $26 million to get off our back. And that's only after years and years of agitation by people on these issues that they even get, and nothing of substance will be done. I mean, look, everybody should just understand how the government works. What are the things that get fast, immediate attention and action? And what are the things that are persistent problems that seem like they never get solved, but everyone keeps talking and talking and talking, or not talking at all? You know, there's two kinds of issues. There's ones that are just totally covered up, and there's others that are just endlessly talked about while nothing is actually done. And then there's a third kind, which is something that immediately gets action and acted upon and moved upon. All of a sudden, the red tape and the bureaucracy, that's not an obstacle. And that's everything that Jews want.
Well, you know, that's what I hate about the U.S. government is that it, you know, if you were to look at how it handles things like the opiate crisis or how it handles things like, you know, youth suicide and things like that, you would assume, as many libertarians and conservatives do, that government is simply inept. But then you look at the actual well-oiled machine that it turns into when some Jew somewhere is offended or, scared of something. And then you realize, wait a second, no, it's not that they're incompetent. It's that they're malicious and that they don't serve us. They serve someone else. They serve our enemies.
Yeah. And when you start to understand this, and I think there's a part of people that kind of understand this internally, if not totally in the front of their minds, like they kind of get it, because when they know, when something happens where Jews are all of a sudden hot on a topic, like even libertarians get, like the shooting in New Zealand, for example.
Yeah.
Even libertarians got that. Oh boy, shit is coming down and is coming down fast. So all of a sudden, their idea of a inefficient government bureaucracy that takes forever to move and doesn't work properly, that goes out the window when they realize, like, oh crap, there's going to be this bipartisan support and consensus to move on certain things like right now. And my inept government narrative is not really applicable. Even though they'll still say that when they talk about politics, internally they know it's not true. It's a funny mind block they have. But
well, you know, the same goes for the courts.
Yeah.
Like, you know, constitutionally speaking, it's illegal for the president to declare or rather engage in a war without approval from Congress, right? But in 2011, they actually passed a law where the president can act unilaterally to engage in foreign conflicts without approval from the legislative body. That, my friend, is unconstitutional. It should lose if brought up on a lawsuit. But who is suing? Is the ACLU suing them for that? Right. No. So why is it that it's unconstitutional for the president to, why isn't anyone talking about it? So again, our institutions are not inept. They're not incompetent. They're just against whites. They're just against the West. Yeah. And they're just there to hurt us. That's what it is.
We always
There's
have
no other explanation.
You know, you and I particularly, we always have ideas of how this or that could be fought if somebody with the necessary money and clout would do it, but they never do. You know, and then you look at the organization, even if, you know, sometimes there are supposedly official organizations that are meant to do these things, that are meant to protect these things, and they just don't.
Right.
Where was the ACLU for the kid that put up the swastika poster in New York to challenge the blatantly unconstitutional swastika ban in New York State?
Yeah.
It's just the first example that came to my head. Where were they for that? They're not going to fight that. What do they care? They know it's unconstitutional. Right. They've even offered an opinion. Oh, it's clearly unconstitutional. Somebody sued over that. They'd probably lose. Why don't you do it? You know?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's called the Authorization for Use of Military Force, AUMF. It was passed September 18th, 2001, in the aftermath of 9/11. And it basically gives the president carte blanche to execute wars for Israel. And so, you know, this is very illegal. It's specifically prohibited by the U.S. Constitution. So, again, I would rather live, you know, this is what I was saying before. Like, I would rather we have governments and institutions run entirely by incompetent black ladies.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because at least when it comes to the bad stuff about the repressive and evil stuff, they would be incompetent.
They would be as incompetent as they are anywhere else.
Right. But because we have, you know, look at every FBI director and CIA director in the last, you know, forever. It's always a Germanic man of some sorts. It's never a woman. It's never a black. It's never anything. It's always some kind of Germanic, or in some cases, Jewish man. But it's always someone that's hyper competent. So they never really apply their affirmative action standard. I mean, they apply it to the presidency, right? They're like, oh, we need a black president. We need this or that. Yeah,
but Obama was when it comes to things that actually that wasn't dumb, but that's neither here nor there. Politicians are,
But when it comes to things that actually control our country, the people that actually have power, they always are very, very careful and quite.
Who are the prosecutors? Who are the prosecutors that are going after Ram? Thomas Cullen. He's like a waspy white guy who comes from a legacy family of white attorney, of powerful white attorneys in Virginia. He comes from a wealthy family. His father is Mike Pence's attorney, who was also Virginia Attorney General before him. Why is this guy not a subject of this kind of affirmative act? Why this guy's comes from a legacy powerful white family? Where does all this intersectional shit apply with him? Well, it doesn't, because he is actually going to do – his prosecution team is going after Charlottesville people, Ram and others. And, you know, would you put that in the hands of some, Alabama gamer that wanted to that would probably say really dumb things to the press and like, compromise their own case and make the thing a farce? Like, remember when that black went after the those lacrosse students and lost because he was so fucking stupid about it?
Or the people that were behind the Zimmerman prosecution too. I mean, I know some of them were black, not all of them. I don't think the main prosecutor was. Yeah,
but Thomas Cullen, that's the other thing. I mean, Thomas Cullen's also a Trump appointee. Imagine that.
Yeah, what a disgrace.
And like I said, they've got connections because his father is Mike Pence's personal lawyer. I mean, after he retired from being Virginia Attorney General, now he's taking on Mike Pence as a personal client. So, and in relation to the Mueller probe,
I wonder if there's a link.
This guy's connected, man. I mean, look, of course there's a link. I mean, even if it's not directly to, Mueller or whatever, like
this guy came out of his ball sack.
The whole system, I mean, this guy, he's a system guy. He's from a powerful family, and he's doing what the system wants, and he's going to get rewarded for it.
You know, all these white privilege assholes, the affirmative action assholes.
What about Thomas Cullen's privilege? Let's attack that.
Let's have a law where your kid can't be filling the same position you once held.
Yeah.
Like, let's do something like that. Some kind of anti-nepotism law. I'd be down for that. But there's no momentum behind that. Instead, the affirmative action stuff is just a cover for keeping ordinary white people out of positions of power. I'm talking about working class and middle class white people can't go to Harvard. They can't get into the Ivy Leagues. And so they're basically locked out of the house.
I mean, let's look at this cheating scandal. Now, you know, upon review of the cheating scandal, actually what we saw wasn't Jews cheating in that scandal that were caught. The fixer was a Jew, but the clients were Gentiles.
Yeah.
Because that's how they needed to go. And they, so basically what that means is you can gain access to these institutions for your children if you're a wealthy Gentile. I mean, they weren't all even white. Some of them were Hispanic, some of them were Asian, and some of them were white. So, but you have to be wealthy to be white and get your kids in, and you have to go through a Jewish fixer to get your kids into one of those institutions.
Yeah, disproportionate. I mean, one
critique
that some leftists make of...
You can't just be a gifted white person that is recognized, and yeah, anyway, good.
Well, one critique that certain leftists make of right-wing discourse around affirmative action is that a large proportion of Ivy League students are legacy entries. And they're right about that. I mean, I agree with that. I mean, I agree with both. I agree that the affirmative action is bad, but also that the legacy is bad, you know? So, you know, if your father went to Harvard and he donates a lot of money to Harvard and to its endowment, then you get into Harvard, right? That's the agreement. That's not how it's supposed to work. And if it is how it's supposed to work, then Harvard should stop being synonymous with a golden ticket to the elite, right? So,
well, I mean, the other thing about that is that a lot of that legacy stuff is now Jews, right? So the leftists will criticize that. But, okay, let's hear, you know, how did Jared Kushner get into Harvard?
Yeah.
He literally was bought in. And even at the Jewish private school he went to, the Jewish private high school he went to, the teachers were scandalized by him going to Harvard. They were like, there's no way this guy was a C student.
Yeah.
How the fuck did he – and basically Charles Kushner, like with everything, with that guy in particular, he just buys his way everything. I mean, not all Jews are necessarily that – I mean, that's one example. It's a wider problem. Charles Kushner is a particularly egregiously bad Jew that he gets caught doing this stuff, and he's very kind of – clumsy-handed with it, or he just buys his way into everything just like a bulldozer. But there's a lot of Jews that are more slick than him. But you know, that's just one example. But that's a leg, that's how you get in, right? Like, that's how you, if Harvard, if a C student, if a mediocre student at a Jewish high school gets into Harvard, then it's a bullshit institution.
Also, another thing too is that the blacks and non-whites that get in tend to be either mindless careerists or Uncle Tom types,
but they're also brutally on board with the intersectional stuff. They're totally, and they do these things like I saw this performance piece that some black at Harvard was doing, where he stands in the middle of Harvard Yard in like slave chains, and like all the other people stand around and like golf clap. Yeah, of course he does. But all these other people, all like the whites and the Jews and everyone, all the Asians, whatever, they all just stand around and they just like golf clap. Oh, wow, look at this protest against whatever the fuck.
Yeah, you know? I doubt Harvard admits any students from the ATLA World Missionary School.
No. And imagine, you know, and so this guy does this.
By the way, they're under investigation right now after a Jewish hit piece on them. I don't know if you know this.
Yeah.
Pastor Manning and his church and his school are being attacked a lot, and they filed some Jew.
Oh, they're trying to take his property from him.
They filed a complaint with the Department of Education in New York, and they're planning. They're probably going to shut them down, dude. So, you know, all you Jews listening to this,
so
that are
freedom,
constantly complaining that white people are burning down black churches. Well, this is the equivalent of burning it down, except that Pastor Manning can't start a GoFundMe.
He can't make an insurance claim.
Yeah.
I mean,
this is the same thing.
I mean, the white people burning down black churches, I mean, let's be honest. They finally got one where a black metalsburg burned down some black churches. But, you know, 99% of these cases are just insurance fraud. And, like, you know, that's why you don't ever hear about it, because it doesn't fit their narrative to tell you that, because they want to keep that one in the pocket. But, they're actually taking from a black preacher. They're not burning it down. They're just going to take the property. They'll probably knock the building down, or they'll repurpose it to some global homo shit. They'll probably take his church and then turn it into
some – they'll sue him out of existence.
Well, what they'll do is I know that a couple years ago he had people going after his property, the actual church property in Harlem there. And they'll probably find a way to take it from him. And they won't, not only they'll tear the building down, they'll turn it into some center for gay education or something.
Here's the article that came out yesterday. It's by Rebecca Klein.
Oh, God.
Investigative journalist. You know, so it came out on the 29th. And it says, Pastor Manning runs a school inside Atla Missionary Church. Former students say he psychologically abuses the kids, teaches them to hate gays, and convinces parents to abandon their children. So this is all about how Pastor Manning has a cult of personality, how the, you know, it's a typical smear.
Yeah.
When's the last time someone wrote this about a synagogue or a congregation?
They just don't write about synagogues at all.
You know, when's the last time someone did investigative journalism on that? I mean, this is a great example of how, you know, blacks, the blacks that are doing the right thing, teaching their people good values, teaching them to obey the law and have and stick with their kids and not do drugs and not engage in criminal activity. Jews don't like them. Jews will actively suppress them, as we see here. I mean, we praised Pastor Manning a couple weeks ago. I wonder if it's related, actually.
They've been going after him for a while.
Yeah, this is an escalation of that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember a couple years ago, there was some real estate thing. They were actually just trying to seize his property from him, which would basically be, you know, the end of that. And now this is another tack that they're taking.
In the article, it says that Pastor Manning, that a lot of black families that are, you know, suffering from various social issues, they go to Pastor Manning and he sorts them out. Like, there's one case where it said, like, a black family that was on the brink of a divorce, they went to Pastor Manning and he saved their marriage. Okay. So these are good things. These are good things. They're socially constructive things to do for blacks. And what are Jews doing? Well, the Klein at the HuffPo, who gets money from the Klein at the rap, the rap record label, files a concerned troll complaint with a Klein in the Board of Education. And then this black church gets Kleined. Yeah. That's it. I mean, it's that simple.
And, I mean, let's be honest here. This whole progressive stack thing, there's no progressive stack. Jews are on top. That's it. Like, you know, Jews are on top, whites are on the bottom. But other than that, there's not really. But I don't think Pastor Manning is, like, in any way above us on the stack.
No.
Right? Like he doesn't get to speak before a white person.
Progressive pyramid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's going on right now. We also want to talk a little bit about, since we were talking about the media, Covington and all that, something similar happened to Roger Scruton.
Yes. Yeah, that was it. Yep.
So Roger Scruton is understood to be probably the most thoughtful conservative intellectual. And when I say conservative, I'm not talking about necessarily a Whig or a Tory or something. This guy is more so an old-fashioned, like, paleo con type.
Yeah.
It's very, very much about art and culture, you know, real conserving real things. And that's why Jews despise him.
Yeah.
So, even though Roger Scruton will kiss the ring, so to speak, they still despise him because of what he represents, which is Western art and beauty and air and accomplishment. So anyway, this man is a great philosopher. He was serving with the Tories, the Conservative Party of Britain, in an unpaid position. He was in charge of beautification.
Yeah. And boy, do they need to take him out for that. That's the thing. Look at what he was in particular talking about, which is art and beauty and that kind of stuff. And, you know, that's very important for them to not allow that.
Well, you know, the thing is, Roger Scruton is an avowed enemy of modern art and brutalism and all that shit. Yep. And, you know, it's funny, leftists and Jews will admit that everyone hates modern art and brutalism.
They know. It's a punishment.
But they also say that the people that criticize it are fascists. Yeah. So,
I mean, if you let them talk about that stuff long enough, and they've tipped their hand on the discourse surrounding Notre Dame, they've tipped their hand. There's been a couple of articles that have come out that have let slip what's going on, and they just admit that they do these to punish people. We make ugly buildings to punish you. We know that you hate them, and we're saying fuck you. Like the, I mean, the worst case is the Daily Beast saying make Notre Dame ugly to spite the alt right. And there was another recent piece I haven't gotten a chance to read yet that came out a couple of days ago saying essentially the same thing. So it was a little more thoughtful. It was in the Atlantic about the alt right has turned Notre Dame's restoration into a lightning rod. In other words, we are a thorn in their side. This is what I was talking about earlier about how, like, don't think that we become irrelevant. They have to deal with us in every aspect. Look at how much we are preoccupying them when it comes to the talk about Notre Dame. They are really mad about this. This is another reason. This is the, like the Roger Scruton scandal in a weird way sort of was a premonition of exactly what happened to Notre Dame, because I'm sure he's going to weigh in on that. But they wanted to, you know, in a weird way, they destroyed his career right before he would have had a chance to weigh in on it.
Right.
He can weigh in on it now, but this whole scandal and everything. And so, yeah, it's like, it's just don't ever think that what we're talking about is irrelevant. I mean,
if we weren't doing this, they wouldn't be doing this.
We triggered them into openly admitting that modern art and brutalist architecture and the ugly shit that they do is there to punish and demoralize people.
Yeah,
we got them to openly admit that.
Well, what I found interesting is that Roger Scruton has always been rather beloved. He's kind of like this Cold War relic. So during the 1980s, Jews would dip their toe in certain types of, you know, traditional or Western traditionalism as a kind of rallying point against the Soviet Union. It's very similar to how they encouraged patriotism after 9/11 as a rallying point against the Iraqis and the Afghanis in the wars and so on, and potentially even the Iranians. But they can move from seashell to seashell just as quickly. So now they don't see any use for Mr. Scruton in the public eye other than bad stuff, because there's no more Soviet Union. So now they're going to treat him just like any Bulgarian communist would have treated a political dissident in his own country.
Yeah.
And you know, Roger Scruton is famous for this, actually. He used to go to communist countries in the 1970s and 80s and link up with underground dissidents, and he brought some into his house famously and so on. Kind of ironic that now he needs a place to stay.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's ridiculous. So for those of you that don't know what happened, a journalist, who did that journalist work
George
for?
George Eaton, who's a bug man.
Yeah,
a
bug man journalist. I forget what publication. Was it the Daily?
The New Statesman.
The New Statesman. Okay, the Jew Statesman. So he goes to do an interview with Roger Scruton. And going in, now just so you understand, going in, this guy's intention was get him fired from his government advisory position. That was the goal. Okay. So he went in under the guise of doing an interview with Rogers. He wanted to do an interview. He did an honest interview. Roger Scruton did an honest, he assumed this guy was an honest journalist that wanted to do an interview and talk about the topics of the day. So they do that. Then the guy edits out of context all of these things that he says. He like maliciously edits the tape and says, look, Roger Scruton said all these racist and fascist things. And then as soon as it comes out, the Tories fucking hop to like obedient little lemmings, and they like immediately fire him. And again, it was very similar to the Covington thing. They didn't think, hey, this is a liberal, you know, even from their own perspective, this is a liberal paper coming out of the hit piece on our guy. Maybe we should stick up for him. No.
Right.
I can almost see these fucking morons, to the extent they're not just being told to do what by Jews, like thinking they're like being strategic, like, oh, we'll get out in front of this. We'll fire him before they can even get us, you know? But, so some moronic, Tory MP tweets out, oh, someone who says racist things, this is a no-brainer, people, or some dumb fucking attempted, like, cool, you know, millennial fucking Zoomer social media catchphrase thing he tried to do. It was really stupid.
Yeah.
And he gets fired. And then it comes out that, someone at the New Statesman was apparently disgusted by this and leaked out the actual full tape of the interview. And it's just clearly been maliciously edited. So, but what happens? Does the reporter get fired? No, he got reprimanded.
Well, George Eaton and people in his milieu were celebrating.
Oh yes,
the scalp. They went out and they were popping champagne.
Yeah,
they were
able put out an Instagram. After Scruton gets fired, he put out an Instagram picture of himself popping champagne, saying that feel when racist and fascist gets fired, and then he got all this praise. That picture has been taken down now, and the whole thing has been exposed, but is Scruton getting his job back?
No.
No.
And the worst part is, and this is something Peter Hitchens pointed out, he said, you know, this is a quote, it says, "Interesting. Two of the worst poltroons in the Scruton case were Tory MPs who certainly don't keep quiet about their military careers, Tom Tugendhat or Tugendhat and Johnny Mercer. I've seen much braver pacifists, but the proper right, you see, still has morals. It cannot do what the leftist journalist George Eaton in the New Statesman magazine did to Sir Roger Scruton. Take Mr. Eaton's glee after Sir Roger had been disowned by the Tory government." So, essentially, Peter Hitchens is doing the beautiful loser thing and saying, yeah. We can't sink down to their level. But, you know, Rod Dreher, who's another paleocon, he's a Catholic paleocon, he agrees with Hitchens, but he says, well, this is why we're going to lose, though. He says, we're going to lose because we're not willing to fight dirty like these people are.
Well, you know, I'm willing to fight dirty.
Well, yeah, because I'm a fucking fascist.
Yeah.
I'm a fucking fascist. I'm not a conservative. That's what I say. I'm not a fucking conservative. Right. This is important to me, and it's existential. So if Rod Dreher, and sorry, I love Peter Hitchens, but if Peter Hitchens – if they don't want to take this task up, well, they should just fucking outsource it to us.
Yeah.
How much do you want to bet Roger Scruton wouldn't be chased around by a social media mob and the media Jews if we were in charge? How much do you want to bet?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's so easy to, I shouldn't say so easy. We know how to fight these people. But yeah. The problem is that one, the understanding and the knowledge of how to fight these people was lost for a time. And now that we're regaining it, in terms of people that are actually in positions of power, they're all just controlled opposition. And if they know how to fight, they won't do it. And a lot of them just don't know and they don't want to and they don't care. I actually have some amount of respect for Peter Hitchens, and Rod Dreher is funny when he lets things slip like that. But, you know, also this beautiful loser stuff. I mean, to the extent it's not just a cover because you're taking Jewish money, I don't think Peter Hitchens is corrupt like that, but, you know, he's a Christian. And it comes out of that viewpoint. I'm sorry, Christians, but this is one problem with certain strains of the belief
system. I don't agree entirely with that angle. I think Peter Hitchens genuinely believes this in his case. I'll tell you why. He's not one to shy from controversy. He did write that book on the Second World War where he basically says the British were the bad guys. So he's got balls to that extent. But in the case of Rod Dreher, I honestly think the conservatives in America are more corrupt thoroughly in terms of head to toe. They're more corrupt. Oh,
yeah. No, I don't think Hitchens is taking any money or anything like that. I mean, I think he's – yeah, no, I think he does truly believe it.
Yeah.
That was my point. I think it comes out of that kind of a worldview, though, of like, well
– but it's not a Christian one. It's a prestige thing. Well, I think it's a prestige thing. I think he doesn't want to be.
We could get into that. The waters. We could talk about the roots of that, but that's fine.
That was also, you know, off topic. That was also Enoch Powell's problem. But anyway, we can talk about that another day. But what I am saying here is that here's an interesting quote from Rod Dreher. It says, "I can't see any moral justification for embracing the degraded standards of George Eaton and New Statesman, nor of the lying liars of the media and activist mob who tried to destroy innocent high school boys for the high crime of wearing."
He saw the comparison there as well.
"I favor using every legal measure to compel them to answer for their libels, but never can we stoop to their level. Alas, as Hitchens says, this is why they will win and we will lose. But what will they win? They will tear each other to shreds, having proved that they are nothing but a pack of hyenas."
Yeah, but they'll tear a lot of other people to shreds, too.
and they will lose the, but here's the interesting part, and they will lose the consent of the rest of us to be governed by them, with consequences that cannot be predicted.
Well, okay.
That's Freer Damas talking about who he's talking about. He's talking about yours truly. No, I'm kidding.
No, but I mean, I find that just so frustrating. It's like, because we will sit here from the moral high ground. They're going to tear each other up, but they're going to tear up everything else too. Right. In the meantime, they're going to tear a lot of people apart, not just themselves. They tore up Roger Scruton. They're going to tear up more people. So how many more victims are you? How many more victims of them are you willing to see be torn apart before they tear each other apart and tear the whole civilization apart in the process? So you can sit there on your fucking high horse. That's what makes me so angry at these people.
Rod Dreher, though, increasingly is doing what we do, which is to compare dissidents in America and the West to dissidents in the Soviet realm, in the Warsaw Pact countries. He's actually, it says here, he's writing a book where he's meeting, he's going to Slovakia to meet anti-communist dissidents who, he's writing a book about them and what their take on the West is, where they basically agree that the West looks remarkably like their experiences in the Warsaw Pact countries and communist countries. I've actually heard this from multiple people. A lot of some of the people I know that are from communist countries, they're like, you know, I feel in the United States of America that if I do something even mild, like say something good about Trump, that I have to constantly look over my shoulder for spies and crowdsourced surveillance type of shit, where the bug man pulls out a phone and films you saying something or doing something that this minority of oligarchs don't approve of. So, like, a lot of people see, at the very least, they say it feels the same.
Mm-hmm.
And the technicality that, they're not putting you in prison for your speech. Well, we can talk about the Rise Above movement now, too.
Yeah, well, I just want to say one thing.
They're not putting you in prison for your speech. But you know what's funny? The Soviets didn't do that either. When the Soviets had to imprison a dissident, they would be like, well, we're not imprisoning you for what you say. We're imprisoning you because you you have this – you bought this VCR from the black market colluding with foreign intelligence agencies. It's not about your opinions. So the Soviet courts, everything was done by the book, okay? A Soviet judge had to oversee the indictments. Soviet politicians had to answer for them. And, Soviet courts had to convict people. And it rarely was specifically for criticizing the government, even if that was the actual reason. So how is that any different from the United States is what I would say, or especially UK or Germany?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's in the U.S., I would say the problem is particularly acute because they have legal reasons why they can't jail you for your ideas. And there might even be the possibility that anybody jailed for their ideas would get support from people, generally speaking, on free speech grounds. I mean, that maybe was – that's less likely the more embedded in the elite a person is that they would ever speak up for free speech, which is why there was a very big push by the sort of J left to associate free speech with Nazism, which is, you know, I'm willing to take it. Like, let's make it. Let's do it. Like, yeah, free speech means you're on our team. If you speak up for it, fine. But yeah, I mean – you know, and look, why can't the Tories just give Roger Scruton his job back? Right?
Why would they do it? Why would they respond to this nonsense to begin with?
Yeah. Why would they respond to agitation by a paper that it doesn't write a single good word about them?
Well, and also, you know, look at how hard it was when the Daily Caller doxed that Antifa guy, Joseph Alkoff, the Jewish Antifa guy. Mm-hmm. This guy is, by the way, facing violent hate crime charges as we speak.
Yeah, he's a violent agitator. He's actually he actually engages in conspiracy to commit riot in multiple states around the country.
There was a liberal or Democratic Party affiliated think tank that had him on their payroll.
Mm-hmm.
And the Daily Caller, quote, reached out to them for comment. And they refused to fire this guy until the cops arrested him for a violent felony.
Yeah.
So – you know, why can't they be
They know better than to, if the hit piece is published in an enemy publication. They're not going to fire somebody. There is no liberal or democratic organization that will fire a person because a right-wing publication doxes that person as an Antifa. None.
Yeah.
The firing only came when he faced criminal charges.
I mean, even in the case of, what's it, Gunn, James Gunn, the fag.
Yeah.
That was joking about raping children or whatever. Mm-hmm. That guy initially got fired, but they gave him his job back.
Yeah.
After the firestorm blew down. I mean, imagine the publicity crisis of having a guy directing children's movies, making jokes about raping children.
Yeah.
That is a PR crisis, and they kind of they put him on the back burner for a bit, but he's back. He's back. So, yeah. So you're going to lose.
I mean, I'd like to see maybe Mike Cernovich should agitate about that again. I mean, you know, they were so freaked out because Mike Cernovich was, I mean, I don't know, from what I could tell, he was the one that started this. Maybe someone else didn't. He took credit, but whatever. But he was the main one that was promoting the story, and they were freaking out by the fact that Mike Cernovich was able to influence anything at all.
Yeah.
And they were saying, because of who Mike Cernovich is, you should not listen to anything he says. Why don't we adopt the same fucking standards?
Right.
The people that are telling you to fire people, to arrest people, are fucking communists and anarchists. Ignore them. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, I can't believe this shit. But yeah, that's the situation we're in. And I think these older conservative types, they see what, you know, in their wisdom, whatever it is, they see where this is going. They know that there's going to be karma for this.
Yeah, but you can't really expect people like Peter Hitchens and Roger Scruton to be revolution. They're old. They're tired. I mean, I look at pictures of Roger Scruton. This guy looks wiped out. Like
he's just, ancient.
He's like, holy crap, what the? He's got bags under his eyes. He's got this long suffering look on his face. And he's believe it.
I was watching a Scruton documentary from like the early 90s from the BBC, and he looked old even then.
Yeah. And of course, you know, once this scandal was exposed, now you get the mainstream left, so-called, or really just the openly Zog press, like The Guardian, coming out and just shoring up the narrative. So this editorial from the 26th by this broad Zoe Williams, Roger Scruton is not the victim of a left-wing witch hunt. Here's why. I mean, I'm not even going to bother reading this, but it's just like, yeah, they're still doing narrative control on it because this is a blow to them.
Yes, exactly.
This really made them look bad. Like, this made them look really bad. And he didn't say, I mean, look, just for the record, like, he was saying things that were really, you know, basically he was saying, like, Islamophobia isn't really a problem. It's that, like, these people are incompatible with our society and it's creating a lot of social problems.
Well, you know,
he's exactly not wrong.
I agree. And here's the thing, too, is that one subtle consequence of what they're doing here is that, you know, if you get into the same amount of trouble for tiptoeing around issues like Roger Scruton does, yeah, as you do for just coming out and saying it, more people are going to start coming out and saying it. Because
yeah,
you get the same consequences without any of the good parts. So I find that they're making a big mistake using this so brazenly, because they're just going to encourage more and more people to be more racist. Like, you know, everyone's going to start giving the opinions they give in private, yeah, but in public.
Oh, here we go. I'm actually skimming this. Oh, she's very concerned with his comments on Soros.
They love doing that.
Scruton told Eaton, anybody who doesn't think there's a Soros empire in Hungary has not observed the facts.
Yeah, that's what this is about.
Okay. So now, of course, he then qualified his comments by saying, I'm not anti-Semitic, but like, you know, at that point, it doesn't matter. So she's just saying it doesn't matter that he put that qualification on and that Eaton left it off. It's fundamentally anti-Semitic.
What, okay, you can't criticize George Soros?
Yeah, no,
now?
It's like, it's amazing. You can't. No, they actually started making that rule after that's increasingly been a thing where they've increasingly been kind of making a rule of you can't criticize George Soros. It was really after Bowers, I think, that they started to bring that in of like any kind of, like, I remember actually there was a big push after the Bowers incident where they were saying, you know, really, you know, because he apparently had some things to say about Soros on his social media. And so they were like, see, look what happens when you talk about Soros. But it's like, all right, well, who cares? I frankly don't care about that. The issue is what's true.
It's so obvious that that's just a way to prevent people from criticizing the powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty obvious what that's about.
Yeah. And I think a lot of Soros memes are kind of dumb. I mean, particularly ones calling him a Nazi. But the problem for them is that it's, you know, maybe if you start with Soros, you start, you know, as a starting point, then you start looking in a little bit deeper. You're like, oh, wow, there's a whole thing going on here.
Well, Soros doesn't work alone.
No, you know? He can't work alone.
A lot of conservatives feel like they can criticize Soros because he's not the most predatory.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, the Jews at Breitbart got out in front of it with this Soros is really a Nazi thing, and they basically poisoned that well. And there's a lot of people on the left that is such a dumb talking point that they can't believe that it's sincere.
They laugh about it.
Yeah, they laugh. And so I've seen it. I've seen grug brain boomers and you know, those types of people repeat it. And of course, they love repeating that kind of stuff because it's taking somebody they hate and putting them in an allowed hate category, which they think is going to give them free rein to vent about this person as much as they want. But it's like conservatives are so eager to put people that they don't like into one of two categories, Nazi or Islam.
That's what happened with the black guy that threw the boy off.
Yep, they put him into the Islam category, and George fucking Soros, they put into the Nazi category. it's unfucking believable, and that's why like people have to be aware of this. And these are both like fucking release valves.
Yeah.
That they're giving them. You can rant about anybody as much as, and they know that on some level, these people know you can rant about any. I mean, first of all, there's Jews that are actively controlling this, but for the people that fall into it, they have resentments and anger at certain kinds of people and figures, and they want to express it. And they know that the safe way to do that is putting them into one of these two safe hate categories.
Yeah.
Given to you by Jews. And on the left, the safe hate category is Nazi and white person. On the right, it's Nazi and Muslim. Think about that dialectic.
The Nazis even get blamed when Jews in Israel murder Palestinians.
Yes, they say, look, it's a Nazi state. They say like, they're following Hitler's model. Look, the trauma of the Holocaust is why they're doing this or something. I don't know. I mean,
that was one of the smooth brain takes I saw about the New York Times. Like some conservative went out there and said, this is the same newspaper that covered up the Holocaust.
That was Bret Stephens.
Oh, that was him, huh?
Bret Stephens in his column said that the New York Times covered up the Holocaust. It's like, you mean they didn't. They didn't realize what they needed to. They weren't reporting it.
Report on something that wasn't happening.
Yeah, they didn't report on something there was no evidence of at the time,
or ever.
Yeah, well,
like So let's move on to the final thing, which is what's going on with the Rise Above movement.
So we talked about this in depth, and we went over the motion to dismiss, which was denied. By Judge Moon, and you know, I'm not going to say that I'm not pleased with the outcome. I thought there was an off chance that maybe it would be granted because it was a very strong document. Of course, Judge Moon or his clerks. I mean, Judge Moon is an old man. Who knows? Or his clerks, and it's important to.
He's
understand.
82 years old.
He might be 83 by now.
What do you think this 83-year-old judge is going through his mind when he's looking at the FBI's, quote, open source intelligence, and it's all shit from social media and blog posts and stuff? Do you think this elderly octogenarian knows what the fuck is even going on? No. He doesn't know.
Well, look, I was in front of Judge Moon. I argued in front of Judge Moon. I'm not going to say the guy is senile. The funny thing is, at the hearing, he was pretty dismissive of me, but I'm sure that's just because I'm not a lawyer. So he was like, the pro se defendant, all right, say your bit. And then we got to do rebuttals at the end of the hearing, and I was last. And he was going to adjourn before I got to do my rebuttal, and I stood up. I was like, wait. And he was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about you. You go. And I did my rebuttal, and I thought it was a good rebuttal. But in the end, I mean, the real reason I was let out of that case is because I was a pain in the ass, not because of my argument. I mean, look, my arguments were good.
Right.
But it was also my strategy, which was being
the lawyers didn't want you in that lawsuit. Absolutely.
The lawyers didn't want me anymore. Nobody wanted me. Right. And so it was a pain in the ass to everybody. Now, I don't know if people were saying, like, you know, the lawyers, can't themselves request, you know, through any way, official way, request to a judge that he dismiss you, they have to drop the charges. They have to drop their case. And that looks bad, so they don't want to do that. It was a very big problem. Now, the other thing is, well, we could get into more stuff with that. Let's talk about Ram. But the point is, Judge Moon is not necessarily over the hill. He seemed like he was sharp and on point. But that doesn't mean he's not also being influenced by clerks or things like that. Or it could just be that he's being influenced by the broader narrative that's out there. He's being influenced by people are talking to him through other channels, putting pressure on him on stuff like that. I mean, there was a time when Judge Moon, who has gotten cases with white nationalists before, was fair to white nationalists.
Yeah.
But that was when white nationalists weren't an immediate emergency to Jews.
Yeah, a political threat. Yeah, right.
Exactly. So now it's different, and maybe he senses that. He also knows he's up against some really high-powered attorneys.
Who are politically connected and can make his life
very cool. Politically, or the lives of his son or daughter or his friends on the court. You know what I mean? Or I mean, he's 82. That's the thing. So what can they do to him? Nothing. But he's got people, and maybe he's just friends with some of the lower people who want to get his job next. I mean, this guy Joel Hoppe, who's the magistrate, he is a magistrate judge, so he's not I've talked about this before. He's not a federal nominee, but he is obviously going to be nominated to be a district court judge.
Yeah.
And that's got to pass Senate Judiciary. And, you know, Roberta Kaplan can make that not happen for him.
Right.
And so what do you think he's going to do?
I think another thing to look into is the, you know, you can get a somewhat like, for example, recently, Judge Moore ruled that the Robert E. Lee statue in Charlottesville is a war memorial. But I'm not sure exactly what the context of that is. But yeah, you're right about what's his face, Hoppe. You're right about Moon. I would be interested in knowing who the clerks are, because I don't know if I mean, you've been there, you've seen them, you know what you're talking about, obviously. But I have a hard time believing an 83-year-old man can keep up with all this technical cyber social media shit.
He didn't know, but the case against him didn't really rise and fall on any of that. I always thought the stronger argument was there's no actual allegation here. It's just they're just reading off. They're like, on this date, these people went and did, okay, text of the law. Right. Here's what they broke. This is the text of the law. And it's like, how do they do it? Who do they do it to? Can you name me a single victim?
Well,
who did they victimize?
To be fair, they do. They claim Don Gathers was
attacked Mike Mazzellis.
Well, I think that's the quote cleric they're talking about. And then they have members of the Revolutionary Communist Party who, of course, hate the police. They march in Black Lives Matter talking about, you know, kill pigs. But when push comes to shove, they work very closely with them, you know. But compare this to the January 20th inauguration riots. I mean, you have anarchists, Jewish anarchists, that are on video plotting riots. You remember the Project Veritas tapes? They're not just plotting riots. They're plotting a chemical attack on the deplorable. They're plotting to put chains around trains. They're planning all this stuff. It's all on tape. Did the FBI what happened in their case? Well, they had a Jewish judge, and this Jewish judge appeared to be sympathetic and let them off.
Over the course of several years, the cases gradually, you know, 10, 12 at a time, were just dropped. And they didn't make a big thing about it. They just dropped them. And they never made a big thing about it, even when it was going on. You had to search to find any news reporting on it. And then, you know, I remember when Chuck Johnson, like, released the document, he did a FOIA request and got everyone's name and released it. Everyone was all butthurt about that. But whatever.
One of the things that helped the anarchists in the J20 case was they had an undercover cop who was doing a testimony. He was a witness to their plans to riot. And they were grilling him on Antifa. So they said, so you say these people are members of Antifa, but can you tell me, like, where is Antifa headquartered?
Oh, jeez.
I don't even think Antifa – they're doing, like, the old mafia thing where there's, like, there's no such thing as the mafia. They're doing that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when they were pressing him, they're like, could you call in an expert on Antifa? Well, lo and behold, an expert on Antifa doesn't exist. So,
or it's an Antifa himself.
Right, an expert in the sense that the detective was
there's no federal investigator who's like an expert in this group, right? There's no intellectual that's an expert in this group. Yeah, well that's the thing. Like he was the expert because he was the one that was interacting with them. Yeah, it's
and the judge was siding with the anarchists against the undercover cop. I mean, when have you ever seen a fucking judge side with the defendant against a pig? Well, never.
It's when they're co-tribals and political allies.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what's going on. And the case against Marem is very thin. I mean, even if they point to Don Gathers and who actually I have video and I've released it publicly and it's on Jack Corbin put it out there on YouTube and it's well known of Don Gathers attacking Michael Mazzellis with a stick. I've put it on Twitter, it's on YouTube. I've sent it to the attorneys. On top of that, we have more video of all of this stuff, and their claims are specious, but even so, they don't even make direct allegations. They don't say that who was attacked and when and what punch was thrown. They say they incited a riot. Well, how? What do they do?
We can also talk briefly about the Muslim that the ISIS guy.
We'll talk about that later.
Talk about that briefly.
Talk about that in a second. But it's important to
because it relates to this.
It relates to the whole thing.
Whenever you see a federal conspiracy charge, you're basically looking at something that's either political or bullshit.
Yeah.
Okay. Conspiracy. I mean, did anyone out here know that if you go to the store and you buy athletic tape and you wrap your hands at a permitted rally? That this is actually proof of a conspiracy to riot. Did anyone here know that?
That was the one allegation. That was the one allegation that they had. And as it turned out, on video, Michael Mazzellis, whose hands were wrapped, used that wrapped hand to block Don Gather's stick. That's what he used the tape for. Good thing his hands were taped, or he might have broken something. I mean, well, this is
what if his hands
bullshit.
Were taped because he had an injury? I mean, that's. I mean, that
what
is
if maybe
the
sprained
definition
his wrist?
Of circumstantial evidence.
Yeah, yeah. Proof to me. That the only possible reason they could have taped their hands. I mean, and the other thing is only like they also talk about how they bought helmets and shit. They're not wearing helmets in any of the videos. So they didn't even wear them. So what the fuck is that evidence of? But the other thing is I'm not even going to entertain the idea that these things are possible evidence of anything. There was no fucking case and they let the case go forward and it's purely political. And now I thought the motion to dismiss was very good. It's a good document. It's a good legal document. It's a good political document, and everybody should see it, and everybody should look at how Judge Moon simply ignored it and just went ahead with the case because it's political, and everyone knows it's political. And now with one of the defendants, he is being threatened and coerced to plea bargain with unrelated charges that go back several years. So if you were really confident in your case – why are you telling someone they better plead guilty or I'm going to bring charges that are unrelated, that are also chicken shit bullshit, from a few years ago and I'm going to stack all these charges together and I'm put you in jail for 20 fucking years unless you plead guilty? Why would the prosecutor do that if he had real confidence in his case? He doesn't. It's right. Fucking blackmail. It's fucking extortion. It should be illegal.
Another problem we have is we don't have – media that will report the other side of the stories. So, for example, in the J20 case, a big reason why they were able to get away with their riots and going around assaulting random people that were just walking
breaking
around
windows,
Washington D.C.
breaking car windows.
From Richard Spencer to Boomer and MAGA hat, all of them. And the reason they were able to get away with it is because you had publications like Huffington Post, Think Progress. Various other ones. And they were going out there every day writing a new article saying, this undercover cop, he sounds like he sympathizes with fascists, or this is a constitutional crisis. I'm a lawyer. Listen to me. You know, so they had that going for them. What conservative has the balls? I mean, I know for a fact that conservatives know that this federal case against Graham is a load of shit. They know that.
Everyone
knows
it's a load of shit. Thomas Cullen knows it's a load of shit.
The very same Antifa cell that the FBI defers to for their, quote, open source intelligence. They had a bunch of their members arrested just the other day in Huntington Beach for jumping a journalist.
Yeah.
So this is a fucking organized crime group. This is a terrorist group, yeah. Paramilitary group. It's communists and anarchists, largely anarchists. And the FBI is using them as their source for this shit. So, I mean, it's not like they found out, like, you know, it's not like they sat in on a meeting where, like, Rise Above Movement members are talking about bringing Molotov cocktails or whatever. No, nothing like that. Nothing even close to that happened. This is entirely made from scratch.
The case is paper thin. It's totally threadbare. It's non-existent, really. It's not even paper thin. It doesn't even exist. There's no case. It is made up. And the only reason the government even did it, the government had no idea about this. Remember, this all came out of a ProPublica hit piece. And then no action was being made by the government on the front of RAM. Like, they came out of the hit piece. And, you know, months later, they kept coming out articles, still no arrests made, still nothing happening. And then finally, Thomas Cullen issues the arrest warrants. He gets them arrested. He does a press conference, and he just thanks ProPublica. So it was clear that these Jews, these wealthy Wall Street Jews that run ProPublica, had their fake journalist, what's his name, A.C. Thompson, their do this investigation, publish this stuff, create this whole fucking bullshit story about these guys. And then because law enforcement wasn't even on their case, because there was literally nothing there to look, there's nothing at all there. You know, the cops and even the FBI, I think, were just not even aware of this. But then they just broke balls until the Thomas Cullen got a phone call from somebody and like, look, you got to do this. He's like, all right, fine.
And right. Is that how our justice system is supposed to work?
And if
that's
you
like
look,
some real third world shit.
Yeah. And if you look at the indictment, it's a totally weak document. There's no allegations in there. There's no real allegations in there.
There's nothing there.
And so they should have all been let off. But I mean, it was
part of this.
I was hopeful about that motion to dismiss, but I was realistic that it probably wasn't going to get accepted. And now a lot of these guys are talking about plea bargaining. And if it happens, I want to make sure nobody like condemns them, because I've seen a little bit of that, and I just want to get in front of that. Look,
I don't judge my brothers.
I'm not going to judge them for anything they do. And if they do have to plea bargain, if they do have to do jail time, well, we switch our tactics here. We're going to expose Thomas Cullen and Judge Moon and Judge Hoppe and every other corrupt fucking court official, bureaucrat, lawyer, cop, whatever, that was involved in this frame up. And we're going to make sure that every fucking day or week we are out here talking about this and remembering that they're in jail and helping them and being there when they get out. That's what we're going
to
do.
One thing I'd say is, you know, To anyone, listen. I totally understand the detractors. You know, I personally wish that they would fight this and politicize that trial as it should be. But the problem is that without any conservatives will not cover it. They'll just pretend it's not happening, and the Judeo left media will attack. So I totally get it. I mean, try being a PhD student at UCLA with an engineering job and his future ahead of him. You're a man in your 20s. Try being that guy and then having your life upended over some bullshit, being kidnapped by
a political protest,
and then put in a solitary confinement.
That's the other thing.
23/7. Okay, that's what you get.
I don't know what it's like to be in a solitary confinement, and neither do you. And so I can't judge somebody that's literally being tortured. Okay, can you really judge someone who submits to torture?
Right.
I can't. So, I mean, look, I'm sure there might be some guy that's tough enough. But the reason they do it is because it works.
What we need
is a strong community that backs these people. And that's what we got to build.
What we need is stronger networks, stronger legal networks, stronger media networks, stronger activist networks, so that when the next person is in that situation, and you better believe they will do this again. This was a pilot case, okay? They had no evidence, they had no case, but they did it anyway to see if it would stick, if it would work, and it did. So what we have to talk about now is establishing legal support. All types of the types of legal networks and support networks that leftists have that enable them to be able to eat that shit,
yeah.
to be
and,
in
the other thing
to
is
be tortured, but knowing in the back of their minds that they still have a way to fight.
You can withstand. Now, I'm not saying they're being tortured like someone's holding them on a rack and poking them with sharp things. No one's going to withstand that, but in the immediate sense. But being put in a room by yourself for days upon days upon days, it's very, very damaging to your mental health. And you will lose your mind. And if you don't know that there's people out there, I also believe that they were being treated harsher than any leftist ever would be treated.
Oh, of course.
You know, so they're being put 40 days in solitary. Okay? 40 days in solitary is what Robert Rundo had in the holding, the federal holding pen in Los Angeles. So that's, I was amazed at how good he sounded when he called me after he got out. I couldn't believe it. But,
he's a tough guy.
Yeah. He's a little bit too tough for me there. But
he's tough.
No, let's be honest though. Like, if we don't have in place the kinds of things that the left has now, we're not going to have a judge, okay, or at least not for a long time. But there's other things that are important too: propaganda, support networks, moral support, legal support, financial support, all these. And so we're building that. So if we don't have it quite yet on the level that leftists always have an advantage. They've got billionaires on their side, right?
Yeah.
They're always going to be in an advantage with that. So we can't judge guys if the things that would allow you to withstand it aren't there in place. So I'm not even so much worried about that because I've only seen a little bit of it. Most people are like, that sucks, but we got to do whatever we can to support them. And that's the tack I'm taking. And also, we need to go over this case with a fine-tooth comb and expose every little dirty secret and piece of corruption that was involved here. And we need to look at who's involved and name them and point them out publicly.
Yes, yes.
We got to go on the attack against Thomas Cullen.
We need our own media to be writing about this too.
We
need our own newspapers, and we need our own groups that bring attention to these things and so on. Because I am absolutely convinced that if enough of the public knew about what's going on here, this would be a scandal.
And the
conservatives play their part in
they
not
gatekeep
talking
by
that.
Not talking about it. If you put an article on the front page of Breitbart about Ram, that comment section would light up with a whole bunch of white people that are really pissed about this.
And that motion to dismiss would have been granted.
Yeah. And I'm convinced of that. Yep. And they won't do it because they know that the Breitbart editors and reporters know who their audience is, and they know they're walking a very delicate balancing line to feed them red meat while not triggering them too much. And it's very revealing what they make them mad about and what they won't make them mad about. And you know what? Frankly, that audience is getting sick of being pissed about so-and-so is anti-Semitic. And they're being sick of loving the fact that something is happening for Israel. They are starting to see on Arthur Donald, particularly, I'm starting to see a real lack of fucking enthusiasm over all the Zio shit. They are getting sick of it. They're starting to realize this doesn't do shit for me. I was promised immigration reform. I was promised a wall. I was promised a job.
Yep.
And I'm not getting shit while Israel's getting everything.
I get record numbers of immigration, tax cuts for anti-white billionaires, and my guns are getting taken away.
Yeah. And Israel's getting a whole new section of their country.
Trump is actually pretty shitty on guns, to be honest.
Shitty on everything.
He's shitty on everything, yeah. So people are starting to notice that because people are more politically engaged. They're not aloof. The distractions aren't working anymore. And again, if you were to put this case up, like you said, on the front page of Breitbart, there would be pressure on these careerist bureaucrats to lift their siege on these young men. What they're doing to them is so unfair. Imagine being facing 20 years in federal prison for wrapping your hands with athletic tape.
Well, I mean,
imagine that.
Really, it's because of your political views. But yeah, I mean, we know that. But
that's a stated motive.
Yeah, yeah.
Why is it? It's also, a lot of people, anyone out there. So anyone out there that says that we have to stop challenging the Charlottesville narrative, wrong. Wrong. You know why? I mean, we saw this earlier today with Mike. Chris Cuomo had Steve Cortez on, and that guy was saying, he was doing the conservative thing of both sides, right? He's like, oh no, we're against the Nazis and the Nationalists, but we're also against the Antifa. Chris Cuomo wasn't having it because it's not enough to be against the Nationalists.
Yeah.
It's not enough. You also have to be for the Antifa.
Yeah.
And Chris Cuomo was really angry that this guy was saying it. He's like, how could you possibly compare the fascists with the anti-fascists? And the guy was like, well, they claim they're anti-fascist, but their tactics are the same as the brown shirts. Again, doing what you were saying before, so putting communists in a box, putting communists in a swastika covered box.
Yeah, it's the allowed, because they're allowed to hate on Nazis. So they that's the funny thing. Conservatives are in a lot of ways like kind of dumb, and they think that they can sort of like Tom McClintock quoting Winston Churchill to a Jewish panel about white nationalism to try and get them to please respect the First Amendment. Yeah. And they're just like, LOL, are you fucking kidding me? Like, yeah. You can't use our memes against us, dumbass.
No. So anyway, this guy, Chris Cuomo is saying, I'm sorry, Steve Cortez said, Antifa does not have good aim. Antifa wants power, political power, taken through force. That's what Antifa is all about. And that is absolutely true.
He's not wrong.
It's absolutely true. And Chris Cuomo is very mad about that because he's a big fan of Antifa. This guy's a fucking neoliberal. You want to talk about nepotism?
Well, that's a funny thing. Antifa, look who your defenders are. The corporate media. The big corporate media. They're going to bat for you in a big way, Antifa. Does that ever make you think?
No, the new ones actually do think, and they don't care.
Yeah, no,
they're just radical liberals.
If I think about the people I knew in the anarcho-communist milieu from 20 years ago, they would have hit the fucking roof if they thought that they would ever be defended on CNN. They would never have believed it.
But that was back when anarchists actually were fighting capitalism and were also attacked by the federal government, as we talked about in the last Strike and Mike. Every time they would go out and protest the World Trade Organization or the G8 or corporations that hurt the environment, anytime they would take direct action against them, the FBI would be up their ass. Yeah. Okay, yeah. They'd be all up in their guts. So fucking, they kind of understand. The ones that are out now, they understand that. Okay, so I'm not allowed to do that. In a sense, you know, it's funny. That is also a type of conservatism, because, you know, anarchists are no longer allowed to fight capitalism directly, right? They never have been, but they are allowed to fight Nazis and normal white people.
Yeah.
So that's what they've fully embraced. That's why you have anarchists like Emily Gorchinsky.
Yeah, who's literally bragging about her accomplishments within his whatever. He's out there, I sometimes forget, he's out there bragging about all the things he did for the military industrial complex. Now, a lot of
that, not just that, this person is also, I mean, what do you call, you know, if you're a leftist or an anarchist, what do you call someone that has a direct line to the FBI and the police?
Snitch.
And feeds them info. What is that? That's a fucking federal informant.
Yeah.
What makes you think that this person, if they get asked, what do you think the FBI is going to, you know, one day if anarchists ever try to fight capitalism again, do you think this person's going to, you know, keep your name out of their mouth? I don't think so.
Well, Emily Gorzensky already said tankies get the drone.
Yeah. What if,
do you
what
think
if
she has, I mean, that, she's literally saying, I don't care if the drone kills these people with the government kills people with drones. That's what she'll do to anybody. He'll do to anybody. Sorry, whatever. I don't care. That's what this person will do to anyone that they disagree with, even on the left. They already have a pipeline to state power.
What makes you think that if you get into some kind of
and this person is deeply mentally disturbed?
Yes,
as well. Exactly. So yeah, I would be I would be worried about that if I were a leftist opponent of Emily Gorzensky. Here we have a megalomaniacal, insane person on all kinds of hormones. That has a
insane
direct line.
Petty.
Yeah, petty, insane, petty, insane, on all kinds of hormones, a direct line to state power. What do you think is going to happen here? You think it's going to end well for anybody that crosses this person?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think they're going to draw some kind of hard line around?
Oh, I won't. He already said tankies get the drone. Well, I'm willing to take that. I think the tankies should take that threat very seriously.
And also, this person has also threatened feminists that aren't pro-tranny with sending Antifa to their house and shit.
Yeah.
Do you think this person, like, if this person was able to come across some information about you, if you're a feminist or a communist,
that they wouldn't give it to
the feds to settle a personal score?
Every single thing that that person did against the alt-right, they would do against anybody that crossed them. This person is an insane megalomaniac given power that is also on mind-altering hormones and drugs and who knows what else is going on. But Emily Gorzenski would... He's like the type of, I mean, they talk about like, the Jews love to talk about like, oh, Hitler was mentally disturbed. He had one ball and all this other mental problem. Look at this person. Like, look at the people that they're recruiting to do. I mean, it's ridiculous. But anyway, the last thing is this, which is a very disturbing report about this. Now, I guess this, I don't know. There's a rally, I think, in, was it in Huntington Beach again over the weekend? That was, I think, what they were. The press was framing it as a white nationalist rally. It was more of an alt-light kind of pro-Trump thing because I never heard anything about it. And from looking at it, it looked like it was more of an alt-light. And this is also where this Antifa ambushed this alt-light type journalist, this kind of Trumpy kind of guy, who actually, you know, they attacked him. They attacked him. That guy. I hope that that guy doesn't get in trouble. Now he was. There's clear video where he was being attacked and defended himself, but you know that doesn't seem to matter anymore these days.
Imagine if those fucking pussies. It was just one guy fighting a whole crowd.
He was fighting like 10 people. Yeah.
And those, they were such pussies. Like, dude, they were just backing off, and one of them tried to hit him. There's some transsexual was hitting him in the back of the head with a stick, and he punched it in the face and started to cry.
That person, that was quite. I mean, look. The video's out there. We might as well talk about it. Yeah, he got snuck with like a flagpole, and he turned around and wow, he landed quite the blow. But the thing is, it's totally legitimate for him to do that. And you know, there was one dude, and there was like 10 of them. And the funny thing is, as soon as he threw a punch back and connected, wow, all of a sudden the stench of pussy was permeating the area.
Take that lesson, take that video, watch that video, and realize this is what you should take into the political arena as well.
Yes.
Those same rules, they will back off. If you show resolution that you're willing to fight on their level.
Yeah, dude, I was watching that video, and I could smell the pussy from here as soon as the fucking, you know, as soon as that guy started defending himself.
Yeah, imagine if those guys didn't have the FBI and the media backing them up. Guys, it fucking be like the shortest civil war ever. It would be like shorter than the war in Grenada.
There was this report that came out that the FBI stopped a Muslim suicide bomber from hitting this rally. Now that headline is extremely inflammatory. And it's funny, they talk about no inflammatory headlines. Well, suddenly we have an inflammatory headline here. But then you read the article. It was on Yahoo that I saw it. And as it turned out, we have this guy, 26-year-old guy. His last name was Domingo. So I guess he was an Hispanic.
I think he was Filipino.
Oh, that's possible too. Yeah. So he was a Afghanistan vet. So he had PTSD. He was obviously mentally disturbed. He got into Islam, and of course, he got into the stupid ISIS shit or something like that. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if this guy was a patsy from the beginning. So the way the press tells the story, he gets into these reactionary Islam circles online. He starts hating America, talking about how he wants to blow stuff up in America. Then after the shooting in Christchurch, he starts saying he wants to kill white nationalists. Now, this is the point. Now, this is according to the article I read. Now, this is the point the FBI informant, who the article managed to mention, this FBI informant has been paid $300,000 over the last several years for his work for the agency. So anyway, he reaches out and then he starts inciting this guy further. Now they keep saying like, oh, well, shouldn't we reach out mental health when these things happen? It's like mental health. Why not just arrest him right there or intervene right there and get him into some kind of institution?
Yeah,
he's a vet with PTSD that's getting involved in crazy shit online. But no, the FBI sent somebody out to get him to go crazier, to make him start making threats. He wants to bomb synagogues. He wants to bomb businesses. He wants to bomb everybody. But amazingly, interestingly, the target that he finally settles on is a white nationalist rally. That's a little fucking suspicious. And then he gets given a fake bomb by the FBI, and as he's going to plant it, they arrest him. And then they go, oh, foiled bomb plot. Now, this is not the first time the FBI has done this. I've seen them doing this, entrapping people, inciting them, getting them to say they want to plant a bomb. And then they were doing this a lot in the build up to the Iraq war because they needed this propaganda. and the fucking World Trade Center 1 bombing, it's not even controversial that the FBI had informants inciting those people until actually Ramzi Youssef and his team just, they were smarter than the FBI. They gave them the slip and they went ahead and did the bombing anyway.
Do you remember the Curtis Caldwell Center attack?
Yes. That was very...
The FBI is being sued.
Yeah.
Because as the jihadists that they gaslit and provided weapons for, as they were shooting, as they went to engage in the terrorist attack, there was an undercover FBI agent with them.
Yeah.
What the fuck, man?
There were two guys with this guy, too. He thought the two people accompanying this guy to bomb his target were FBI agents. At no point
finds a crazy person on the internet. Yeah. They go and they see the crazy person Fed posting.
Yeah.
Again, everyone out there, you know, I shit on people I don't agree with equally, and it's all constructive criticism. It's not personal. But if you're going out there and Fed posting all the time on social media,
this is going to happen to you.
Expect to get people. Expect to make some new friends. Yeah. Some new friends that glow in the dark.
Some very weird new friends. Some very strange new friends that no one else knows and have some funny ideas. So just everybody should don't be stupid. Now this guy was a mentally unstable PTSD vet. Now he probably was already whatever. And they were saying the FBI made their first contact in March. Now I wouldn't be surprised if they had been gaslighting him all along, but who knows? Maybe not. Maybe he just really was just a mentally disturbed vet that was Fed posting or whatever. Either way, it's equally bad. The whole thing, the FBI, the government could have when that informant made contact, if instead of inciting him to do a bombing, to engage him to thinking he's going to do a bombing, why not just pick him up and put him in a mental institution?
Or better yet, not even that. Pay him a visit and be like, hey, man, do you have access to guns? Do you have access to explosives? Because we're watching you or whatever. I mean, that's what they do to nerds that are on 8chan, right?
Yeah.
So why aren't they doing that to him?
No, they immediately started to incite him. And, of course, I think that the fact that they got him to pick this, what they're calling a white nationalist rally, but from what I can tell was a pro-Trump alt-light type rally.
Yes.
Which is... You see, they can't.
I mean, the feds are not as brilliant as some people think. I mean, the feds themselves may have thought that it was a white nationalist rally, and then the last minute they realized it wasn't, and gave them a dummy bomb instead.
Well, I mean,
who
knows? But it would have looked very bad if that was labeled as a conservative or a Trump rally instead of a white nationalist rally. It would have been a big scandal. It's like, wait, so you let this guy? Because look, again, people could bring up the 1992 World Trade Center bombing where, you know, the FBI informant, there's recordings that were played in court that you can still get access to on the internet, maybe not anymore, but you used to be able to, where you hear the informant tell the FBI agents, yeah, they're gone. They gave me the slip. They built the bomb there. They're going to blow up the World Trade Center.
Something similar happened with the Oklahoma City bombing. There's some dude that lives in Germany. He was working for the SPLC and the FBI, and he was a main player in that plot.
Yeah.
And
I don't want to say that there's no such thing as terrorism and it's all being done by the feds or whatever, but look, people that believe in false flags are not wrong. The government does do false flags. There are examples, and there are blatant examples like the World Trade Center 1 bombing, which has been memory-holed. They don't talk about that anymore.
No.
There's things where there are these crazy ISIS people who are, you know, being incited by these mosques where the Saudis are funding them and stuff, and they go on these crazy this jihadist ideology, which is funded by a ally of Israel. And amazingly, these people are historically used as proxies in Zionist agendas. And the scary thing to me is that jihadists and these fucking Wahhabists, Salafists, whatever the fuck you want to call this grug-brained Islamic ideology, they were willingly used as pawns in the Syrian civil war. They're used as pawns to destabilize the enemies of Israel in the Middle East. Now they're starting to use them here. That's fucking scary. Now, the question is, is the FBI, like, fucking insane, sociopathic, evil, psychopathic enough to actually instigate and allow to carry out a bombing like that, or were they?
Yes.
Was it a setup? And I don't have confidence that they are not psychopathic enough to do it. And why we have to talk about this and expose them. Now, look, I know a lot of people don't like Islam, and that headline is specifically crafted to make you think that there's a white nationalist Muslim war. That's a very bad idea, because that, you know, who's going to be laughing all the way to the shul if that happens, is Shlomo and all of his cronies. So we've got to see, and everyone has to read the fine print on this incident. Understand, this was an FBI operation from start to finish, where they gaslit a mentally unstable person on the internet.
They found on Discord that was Fed posting, and then they gaslit him until he made it reality.
Yes.
And they provide, I mean, the man would not have been able probably to
the
to
only
do any
thing
of this
he
on
did.
His own. They gave him the bomb.
You know what happened? To prove further that he wanted to do it, he gave them a box of nails that they were going to put in the nail bomb, and then they gave him what they were calling the finished product of the bomb, and they were saying, don't worry, the device that we gave him was always just fake. And then he went, and he was going to go plant it with his two FBI pals to the lo- it was, and look, when you look at this, it's unbelievable.
I'd love to see the transcript of their conversations.
I think it should all be fucking made public. Of course, they're going to make it classified, so even a FOIA request won't get it. But
I remember when they were doing this to like Somalis in the early 2000s.
I remember they did this to a retarded guy in like in Brooklyn, whose family was a Muslim part of Brooklyn. His family ran some shop where they sold Muslim stuff, and the guy was retarded, got him to say all this shit.
Do you remember those two niggers that were like they were like prison Muslims, and the FBI was doing the same thing to them, and they gave them fake rocket launchers to blow up synagogues?
There was another thing where they got these guys, they were going to blow up like a pipeline or something, and they were like homeless.
Yeah,
there was like these homeless niggers that were like, you know, drug addicts claiming to be Muslims or something, and they got, and I remember this was from like 4 or 5 years ago. I think it was out in the Bay Area. They got these homeless blacks. They just basically FBI informant got, because again, these informants also are corrupted, because if they're being told, here, you get money if you can catch terrorists, well, they go out, they just find mentally retarded people and get them to say stupid shit. And like, here, FBI, I got one for you.
Exactly. But I'd love to see the transcripts, because I remember reading the transcripts in one of these cases, these entrapment cases, and it was basically like the FBI informant was saying stuff like, you know, it was basically do it, pussy, right? And on top of that, it's not just that. It's like, you know, if you don't do it, I'm going to tell the leader of ISIS that you're a pussy.
Yeah, and why?
And we're going to come after you and your family.
What they're doing? The only reason is because they want to manufacture these incidents. It's the only fucking reason. And it's like, the thing is, look, I'm not asking you to love Islam or anything like that, but just don't be fucking dumb about this. Look at what is actually happening.
Exactly.
You know, like, I get it. You don't like these foreigners in the West. I don't like them here either. But we got to remember that, like, they shouldn't be here, and we should focus on the immigration issue and talk about that, because we do think that these people belong in their own countries. But we don't need to have this become a thing.
So like next time, it's not just that you're fighting off police and Antifa, but now you got like suicide bombers.
Well, that's exactly what they want us to think.
And that's what the FBI wants too.
Yes, that's what I mean. No, that's what I mean by they.
In fact,
that's
I
what
bet that you know, there's so little stirring in terms of like that kind of focused action against white nationalists that the FBI is maybe even trying to meme this.
I
don't agree with people that say the FBI is protecting the public or anything.
No,
I think they actively want to encourage these people.
Of course they do,
into attacking us.
They would love nothing more than for white nationalists and jihadists to start going at it with each other.
Yeah, it's so pointless.
The only person that wins there is the Jews. It's so stupid.
And ISIS is also, like, I think the CIA is starting to fund ISIS again. That fucking Abu Bakr is already, he was spotted again. He made a video.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's probably not even real. Guy's probably just a fucking actor. I'm not going to get all tinfoil hat or whatever, but that
it's important to understand that, you know, the terrorist attacks and bombings and massacres in Europe at the hands of these ISIS operatives were absolutely horrifying, and I understand why people that react to that with hatred towards the people that did it and the people that look like the people that did it. I understand that. But you also got to remember, ISIS is a product of Israel-Saudi CIA collaboration.
Yep.
That's who's creating these people. And then they go out there and they recruit from these alienated Arabs and Pakistanis or whatever that are in Europe that don't belong there, so they're totally alienated, and they get involved, they get radicalized by this bullshit, and then they go back and they fight, and now they're sociopaths and psychopaths because of all the shit they've seen. They blow people up.
Of that radicalization is happening with informants inside of these mosques
who know
exactly what's going on, or in some cases are actually encouraging it?
Yeah, who
how much of that is going on?
We have examples.
What's the extent of that?
We have examples of the FBI. Several of them in the United States, encouraging, you know, basically really stupid people in the Muslim community to say dumb shit, and then they get contacted by. I mean, this has happened many times. This is the first time where the fake intended target was a white nationalist rally, and I do not think that's an accident. Like, given everything that was happening around white nationalism in recent months and weeks, and the fact that this was a Trump rally, really, that they labeled white nationalists. Look. None of this is by accident, so we just have to be aware of it. I'm not saying go out and hug your local Muslim, or you got to love these people. What I'm telling you is be aware of what's really going on and who's really orchestrating this shit.
The FBI is an anti-white activist institution at this point. Yes. And if you don't think they're capable of – I mean, if they were capable of – I mean, these weren't informants, by the way. The people that led – the Curtis Colwell Center attack were not informants. They were actual undercover feds.
Yeah.
And they were the ones that did a lot of the planning. They did the logistics. They oversaw the arms transfers. And they – another weird thing about this is Joshua Goldberg.
Yes.
Was involved in this. Now, if you remember, I remember Joshua Goldberg.
I remember him, yes.
On the Daily Stormer. I swear to God, people don't believe the story when I tell them this. When I saw
Michael Shays.
Michael Slay.
Oh, Michael Slay, right.
When I saw Michael Slay published on the Daily Stormer for the first time a few years ago.
That was like 5 years
ago. I immediately said, this is a Jew. This is a Jew infiltrator. Okay? Lo and behold, this guy was later found that he was inciting ISIS, or he was inciting Muslims on the other side. So he was inciting white nationalists to go after some random Muslim in Australia.
And when this all came out, they labeled him an internet troll. And when they arrested him, he looked the part, but like, who knows what he was really working for? Maybe he was just a troll. Maybe he was just a fat misanthropic Jew. But who knows? Maybe he was working for the Israeli intelligence. I don't know. I mean, when they went and arrested him, he was a fat, curly-haired Jew, and they took him out of his house. He looked like, oh my god, this fucking guy. But I mean, what he was doing was fairly sophisticated shit, where he was trying to gaslight people and crazy stuff, man. Like, it's that's right, Michael Slay, not Michael Shays. Yeah, I remember this. He tried to get something on TRS, and I was
what
like,
Joshua Goldberg specialized in was trying to get white nationalists and radical Muslims to fight each other.
Yep.
That was his whole agenda. And that had some periphery consequences, but he was actually fingered as the guy that was one of the internet brains of the Curtis Colwell Center attack.
Yeah.
So a lot of crazy and weird coincidence happening here.
Yeah, okay? It seems like there's a lot of coincidences here.
So, I mean, if this is what comes out for the public's consumption, just imagine all this shit that we don't know about with this. You know, just assume the worst. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I was amazed at how much – I mean, I was amazed at how bad it looked just from reading the mainstream media article on the case, where I was like, this is literally the FBI went and incited some retard on the internet. Like, how is this not obvious to everybody? And even if there's some technicality where that's legal, everybody should be asking questions about why this is their method of operation. Instead of defusing these situations, why are they fucking igniting them?
And they're doing this for sure on 8chan, by the way. I mean, there's no question in my mind that this is an operation that they've been running. You know, the interesting thing is, though, is that they're not able to catch as many fish And I guarantee that they're spending many more resources on white nationalists than they are on right. Muslim extremists.
They want nothing more than more of this shit.
Yeah,
it's
so
really good for them.
When you see some anonymous poster putting up Hal Turner style things or whatever, like, you know, I don't know. I'm not saying it's always going to be a cop, but
either way, though,
there's a chance.
Either way, you want to get far away from it, though. That's all I'm saying.
Because this is their strategy. But again, it says a lot that they haven't been able to. Yeah. To catch many white nationals doing this, and you better believe they are expending an enormous amount of resources. I mean, they have the laws, they have the legislation written, they have the senators and congresspeople in the tank for it. They may even have Trump on board.
Look, this thing that they did to this
they don't have real cause for action.
You know, this thing they did to this Muslim military vet, they could do to a white nationalist if they could get someone on the hook, right? They are legally allowed to do that. This guy is being charged with terrorism and all the other kinds of crap, right? So legally, even though it's quite clearly it should be fucking illegal if you just look at what they've done. But they're allowed to do it.
It's literally conspiracy to terrorism.
Yeah.
They're breaking the law.
Yeah, yeah. And they're giving this guy everything. They're like, we'll do all the planning. You took part in building
a
bomb.
Here's 10 bucks. Go to the hardware store.
Get
buy
some
a box
nails.
Of nails.
Yeah. I mean, come on now. And so, yeah, but this is what I'm saying. If they can do that to him, they could do it to a white nationalist, but apparently they haven't been able to get someone to bite on that hook.
You buy the nails.
They're probably dangling them out there.
You provide the $5 nails, I'll provide the Anfos.
I mean, in a way, this story, even though it's pretty spooky, I'm kind of glad this came out because now we know to be even more alert for this kind of shit.
Well, I think another intention of the feds to publicize this, because, you know, they do arrests like this all the time, and they don't always get much publicity for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. But I think the reason they're publicizing this one specifically is to scare people
from going
out to rallies. Yeah, and I'm not just talking about white nationals. They want to scare even white.
Well, I mean,
white,
look at the rally that was actually supposedly targeted here. It wasn't a white nationalist rally.
No, it's MAGA.
It was a MAGA Pete type thing. Yeah, so, no, I agree completely. And probably they also, another thing that they want to do is they don't want Trump doing rallies during the 2020 campaign. There's already been articles about how there's advisors telling Trump, don't bother with the rallies. You don't need to do the rallies. Just stop.
They don't like that.
They don't like them at all.
They don't like a bunch of white
people. Even though the Trump is totally cucked, they don't like those kinds of gatherings because it's the wrong energy.
Yeah. It's not about Trump. It's about the people in it.
It's about the energy of that kind of a thing. You know, they don't like that energy.
You know, if in a parallel dimension, Trump wasn't what he is, I wouldn't put it past him to even try and stir up a terrorist attack against a rally.
God forbid, but yeah.
I wouldn't even.
I mean, it's scary to even think about. But yeah.
Well, these people, they're scared, dude. The feds and the globalists and the oligarchs, the Jews, frankly, they're afraid of losing power.
Yeah.
And they're willing to do anything to keep it. This right here, this is just the tip of the iceberg. God knows what kind of fucking psyops and gayops are doing that we don't even know of. Okay. Like I said, anytime you see, some kind of crazy stuff, people, telling you to go commit acts of terrorism and so on, you know, just use some common sense. Like, first of all, why would someone be publicly calling on people to commit acts of terrorism, first of all? Second of all, why would you engage with them? Because if that person is publicly talking about these things, you shouldn't even do it privately, but you know what I mean. Yeah. If someone is going out there announcing, like, hey, who wants to go bomb this synagogue?
I mean,
blah, blah, blah.
If someone's
doing that, I mean, come on. Come on, that's fucking fed.
People in our circles have been pretty well pretty well aware of that for a long time, but you know, yeah,
these are old school tactics they were using against the militia movement and Aryan nations. in the 80s and 90s.
One of their frustrations, I think, with the alt-right is that it's actually more savvy than they were expecting. They don't, they're like, wait, these people are like way, I don't want to impugn anybody else, but you know what I mean? Like, it's like,
well, the thing is that, you know, William Pierce was always able to kind of get skirt that because he didn't engage with that stuff. Like, yeah. William Pierce would just go out and say, listen, I don't support terrorism. I don't agree with any of that
it's
stuff.
It's really very
He was always very careful about that. And yeah, listen, some people might say, oh, well, they're gonna fuck with you anyway. Yeah, they will.
Of course they'll fuck with
you. If you give them a reason, then they
But the other, they thing, feel is this. The other thing is this. They are well aware. Think about this for a second. They're well aware that the pressures on the system, the pressures of the system, pressures on individuals of this system, takes people that would otherwise be normal and fills them with explosive rage. They're well aware of that, and they actually will use that to try and incite these people further to do really stupid shit rather than focus their energies in an actually radical political direction.
Who knows? Maybe that's what Thomas Cullen is going for with the Ram case.
He's hoping that this level of pressure will make somebody do something dumb because they'll start to say, there's no hope. Oh, let me just go off. They probably are trying to create that outcome.
Right. I mean, that's what Hal Turner was doing during the Matt Hale. Remember Matt Hale?
Yeah.
Hal Turner was putting up the – when the judge unfairly blocked – Hale from getting his legal license for his political beliefs. Hal Turner was going out there saying, he put up the address of the judge and said, you know, I wouldn't mind if someone were to kill this guy.
Which, and, by the way, just you know, Antifa does that today and gets away with it.
Right.
So,
but they're allowed to. Yeah. As long as they're fighting whites and patriots. Yeah.
I saw a sign today that was the Antifa poster that was the address of certain nationalists in the Atlanta area, where it said, boy, it would be a shame if someone were to go and vandalize these homes. Definitely don't do that. And it's like, wow, that was pretty clever. Pretty clever. It's like, here's the homes of white nationalists so you can be sure to avoid vandalizing them. It's like, all right, guy. Like, wow, look at the clever memeology of the Antifa here. But yeah, it's clear what's going on there. But why aren't the police investigating that poster? Why aren't they taking
Because they agree with them.
Yeah.
They agree with them.
I mean, like the Identity Europa poster in this town in New York, this guy, there's a whole thing that happened there. The police did a 6-month investigation, fingerprint technology, detectives brought in. Why don't they do that with that poster? Here's a direct call to violence.
If I want to get really meta, you know, back to the Matt Hale case, you know, that provoked a lot of rage in people. That judge unfairly did that, and they were able to get, you know, they entrapped Matt Hale, who basically he didn't do anything, but they were able to entrap him just enough. But regardless, I think what they're going for to some degree on some level, I'm not saying everyone is doing this, but some elements in our government, what they're trying to do is they're trying to trigger people into doing crazy shit.
There's no question.
They're trying to trigger people into doing crazy shit so that Thomas Cullen can go to Congress and be like, listen, look, this is a problem. This is like ISIS. We have to start putting these people in Gitmo.
Yep.
Because they're threatening judges. They're doing this. They're doing that. So keep that in mind. Okay. Don't, you know, if you see someone, I understand people get angry, but the feds are doing that on purpose.
Yes.
You know? So, I mean,
and if you want to say some shit,
they're going by an old playbook.
If you want to truly vent some of your frustrations, maybe go hang out with a buddy and talk in person for a little bit. Rather than, and I'm not talking about like, oh, plan things. I'm saying to let off steam. If you need to let off steam, don't go out on Twitter and start saying stupid shit, you know.
No.
Let off steam in another way by just ranting to one of your buddies in private.
Right. I mean, look at what happened to this Filipino guy. Imagine if, you know, his problem is that his IQ is probably very low.
He's probably a very stupid guy, yeah.
And so he didn't know where to vent. He vents on social media, and so lo and behold, he gets makes a bunch of new friends that pop out of nowhere. They spawn.
He was in, you know, he was in.
Like Agent Smith. They spawn out of everywhere. Yeah. They're like, hey, I agree with you, pal.
From 1,000 places at once, suddenly as if by magic. Anyway, it's pretty late in the show. It's late in the day. I got to get the show out because people are going to be mad that it's not ready for their commute. But you'll have it for your commute tomorrow morning. So I got to get this out. But thanks. This was a good show. Thanks, Stryker. And we'll see you guys next week.
See you, everyone. See you.